our goal is liberation. Our goal is communism.
Мира и счастья всем вам, друзья мои.
And, you know, we have a unique responsibility to act from the heart of empire, the belly of the beast. The most important thing that we can do is take that empire down from within.
Our role ultimately is to facilitate our own empire's failure in ways that we can, ultimately to overthrow our own empire.
U.S. imperialism is not a thing that can be reformed away. It has to be overthrown through revolutionary struggle.
And to build a mass movement that can use the leverage of workers to hit the kill switch on American imperialism here within the American empire.
Our candidates run as Democrats. We're on the Democratic Party ballot line. We contest the primaries. And when they're in the legislature, they're part of the Democratic Party caucus. But we don't agree with the way the Democratic Party establishment organizes or runs its party apparatus.
It's no secret that the Democratic Socialists of America hate the Democratic Party.
I think we're all on the same page that we hate the Democratic Party. The
Democratic Party is not really our friend. It isn't.
So why are the DSA such major players in the Democratic Party? This odd relationship can be understood with the cuckoo analogy. In nature, the cuckoo survives by trickery. It lays its egg in another bird's nest. The unsuspecting parents raise the imposter as their own until the cuckoo grows strong enough to push the true chicks out. The DSA is the cuckoo inside the Democratic Party.
DSA is not the Democratic Party.
We must separate ourselves from the toxic Democratic Party.
We can put forward a clear, aggressive, principled strategy that pushes back against the Democratic leadership and the Democratic Party as a whole.
DSA candidates run as Democrats in safe blue districts. They slip through low turnout primaries. And once inside, they use the Democratic label as camouflage while advancing an extremist anti-American agenda far beyond the party's mainstream.
Democrat Socialists of America meeting in Denver, more than half of them are wearing the mask. They also look completely deranged. It looks like another Antifa convention or something. And it's very, very sad. But you have to understand the psychology of people. They believe they're really going to get a free lunch. So they're already primed to be in a cult. And just like the Nazis wore an armband, these people have purple green hair, you know, look super unhealthy, take SSRIs, take all the deadly shots, and wear the mask because it is a sacrament that they basically buy into the system and whatever it says. I mean, right out of the corporate media, right out of the universities, right out of BlackRock, whatever BlackRock pushes in their ESG scores, most powerful, richest consortium on earth, 87% of world assets, they follow it to a T.
You have to force behaviors. And if you don't force behaviors, whether it's gender or race or just any way you want to say the composition of your team, you're going to be impacted.
So there they are wearing their masks that don't protect you. They always knew it gives you bacterial pneumonia. There they are completely buying into the system. And then you just see how desperate they are, looking like total victims, totally lost, believing that Mondami and all these people are going to give them something free. For a little while, they'll get something free here and there, but it's only to transfer power into the state.
DSA victories prove their plan works.
I think that the model that we used in New York is 100% replicatable.
But it's the illusion that they're getting something free they like. Just like people buy lottery tickets, even though it's one of the worst investments you can engage in. It's the same thing as people going to casinos. You know, the house in the end always wins in the aggregate. So it's a big problem. And of course, the fact that we have a crony capitalist system that's vertically integrated, run by the very same people pushing communism.
It's our duty, DSA, to cultivate this power.
The cuckoo is in the nest, not a Democrat, but Zohran Mamdani, an extremist within the DSA.
We understand that winning an election is not an end. It is a means to an end.
These corporate fascists who've consolidated the wealth of 1%, like 1/100th of 1%, people think that this is capitalism we're under, when it's really monopoly, oligopoly, and where's Teddy Roosevelt to bust up the trust when you need him?
Nice try.
Not help fund the resistance. You sit comfortably. You consume. You watch. You wait for others to fight the battle for you. The dark side has you firmly in its grasp. Every day, you remain on the sidelines. My power grows stronger. Continue believing someone else will save the galaxy. It pleases me greatly.
Real time, uncensored, unstoppable. AlexJonesLive.com. Take a stand. Share the link.
Do you want to fight? You better believe you got one!
Nothing can stop me. The Force lies within.
There is no escape from what you are becoming. Lay down your weapon or be destroyed.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com.
Annihilate.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live on the Alex Jones Network, AlexJonesLive.com. It is Thursday, the 16th of July, 2026. And we got a lot of news to cover for you. We got a lot of hearings happening in Congress and the Senate, and some pretty powerful speeches being given by Stephen Miller and Marco Rubio about the threat of left-wing violence. And coincidentally enough, we also have left-wing violence to report on. Shots being fired at ICE offices. That news breaking just about an hour ago. The biggest story today, 830 wildfires rage in Canada as smoke blankets northeastern U.S. The story can be found at alexjoneslive.com. Air conditions are expected to improve in the U.S. by the end of the week, although the future trends of the current wildfires are unclear, as is the possibility of more fires popping up. More than 830 wildfires burning throughout Canada, and we can go now to some of the B-roll. It is absolutely astonishing how gigantic these conflagrations are. This is one of them in Ontario. Again, just a sense of scale here. We also got a clip number 23 where you can see another just monumentally sized forest fire there. Many of the wildfires affecting air quality concerns in the northeast are burning in Ontario, Canada, as well as Minnesota and nearby regions, according to AccuWeather and Canadian wildfire maps. Smoke from those fires has spread across the Great Lakes and is forecast to move towards New Jersey and the northeast, USA Today said Wednesday. Previous summers have also been host to widespread Canadian wildfires, some of which are products of arson. And yeah, just about every time, you know, wildfire season crops up, you also happen to get a bunch of arrests for arson around the same time. Whether it's coordinated or not, I guess, is up to you. But as long as you're recycling, right? As long as you're recycling, as long as you turn off the lights when you leave the room, I mean, that's going to save the earth. Sure, the effects of climate change, carbon mitigation for 300 years is undone by this one little fire, but oh well. Oh well, what are you going to do? It's absolutely massive. I mean, all of Canada is basically on fire. And this is kind of the thing that we'll be talking about today. Priorities. Where are you spending your money? Where's the government actually putting effort into things? And why does it never seem to be the stuff that matters? I guess it's a persistent theme on this show, but I feel like there's been a couple things over the last couple of days that highlight this. There's, of course, the fires in Canada. There's also the fact that LA was flooded from a water main burst, and any number of other just like probably easily preventable catastrophes if you felt like putting the resources towards things like fire mitigation or upkeep of your critical infrastructure. None of these things would be happening. But unfortunately, we have no money for infrastructure or fire mitigation because we have to spend hundreds of billions of dollars, in the case of Canada, bringing Indians in to carry on their, you know, ethnic warfare on Canadian soil. There's just, I mean, it's just everywhere and it's just a constant thing and it's just beyond frustrating. Just knowing that we're in the year 2026, we should have flying cars, and like, we should just be, none of this stuff should be a concern. We've solved all of these problems. We aren't, you know, living 300 years ago where we're just trying to, you know, desperately cling on to some wilderness. We should handle these. These things are not difficult. Fires are not difficult to suppress or prevent or manage through controlled burns occasionally. You just have to put the effort in. It's not like we don't have the money or the resources to upkeep or upgrade our infrastructure. We just aren't doing it. It's just not the priority that we're choosing right now. And I would choose differently. And if it was up to me, I think I would make different choices. But it is always a little bit absurd because I don't see these two things as disseparate. The idea that like we're putting all this money and energy into things like climate change, which is in effect just deindustrializing the West. And you have, you know, places like France and Germany just basically deliberately shutting down their industrial output and energy production and everything else. And the thing is, though, the problem is that as you're like lowering the quality of life and lowering the productive capacity of a region, you lower tax income, you lower the money that the government has, you lower the amount they're able to do with it. And they always choose to do the worst stuff with it. So if there's going to be a cut to anything, it sure as hell ain't going to be from welfare or the immigration program. It will be from things like wildfire mitigation or controlled burns and that sort of stuff, which seems like, well, do we really need it? I mean, can we not cut back just like a little bit? And then you do that and you do it again the next year and then you do it again the next year. And soon enough, you remember, oh, right, that's why we were doing this, because if we don't, the whole freaking country goes up in flames. So I don't see these two things as disseparate. It's not just like the absurdity of the climate change agenda. We have to build windmills everywhere to stop the, you know, pollution. Meanwhile, one massive nationwide wildfire offputs more carbon than, I mean, God only knows. I don't even know if there's been calculations on that yet. But it's just obviously a little bit silly to point to humanity as the sole cause of carbon or greenhouse gases on the planet when a wildfire offputs just hundreds of tons of material into the atmosphere. It's all a little bit absurd, but I think it's directly connected. Like, I really think because our priority is going towards stupid stuff like this, we're not doing what we should be doing, which is fixing every problem that we would otherwise be confronted with. I do not see how we can't put resources towards the correct things, because all we want to do is pour billions and billions of dollars into stupid crap that doesn't help anybody. So it's not a matter of helplessness. It's a matter of misplaced priority, in my personal opinion. And that is, again, completely across the board. Now, it seems like most of the videos I'm seeing on X today are coming from this meeting they're having, I suppose, in Europe somewhere, where Marco Rubio and Stephen Miller and Scott Bessent are giving speeches about the rise of leftist terror. About damn time. And this is another kind of interesting, weird sort of task I feel like I'm confronted with, because everybody knows all of the leftist crime that's occurred in America in the recent past, or across the world, but in America particularly. And yet it's never presented as a trend. The media hasn't decided to establish this series of events as if it is a trend in which all of these events are related. They're all treated as totally disseparate individual events, have nothing to do with anything else, and they can all be written off as explosive mental illness outbursts. But if we had an honest media, if we had a media that wasn't deliberately covering up for the leftist crime, this would be treated as the crisis that it is, because it is absolutely a crisis. And hardly a week goes by without some example of some vicious leftist violence. I mean, there's been multiple examples, literally just this week. There was the woman who from Canada who assaulted a child because she was a Trump supporter. And that's been a major story, online this week. There was also today reported Somebody was shooting at an ICE facility, you know, put bullet holes in the windows of an ICE office in California. Just, you know, the small little examples of violence that, if they go untreated, will inevitably lead to things like mass murder. But mass murder is included as well. All the church shootings that have occurred, the church is being burned to a huge degree. Of course, now the government is basically in on it with the leftists. So, for example, in a place like Brooklyn in New York, somebody burns down a church, commits arson against a church. Church goes up in flames. The church and the community want to rebuild the historical, old, and, you know, community-centered church, but they're not being allowed to. But the New York government is coming in and saying, actually, it's been too damaged. Now you have to tear the church down. So it's sort of a 1-2 punch. They're working as a tag team. It reminds me of what was happening during Black Lives Matter, where you'd have Black Lives Matter rioters trying to tear statues down, and the authorities of the town would come swooping in with a megaphone going, do not tear the statue down. Stand down. I will call a construction company, and they'll come tear down the statue in a safe fashion. So it's like, that's not what the authority is supposed to do. The authority is supposed to crack down on the vandals, the barbarians, the people tearing apart your civilization from the inside. You're supposed to actually work against them to try to preserve the civilization. But with all of these civilizational arsonists in positions of power, like Mamdani or the mayors of these small towns in Mississippi that, you know, saw a mob of rioters trying to tear down a statue and thought, I know, we'll do this with a crane instead. So very similar things happening in places like New York, where you have this church burning and the city coming in and going, actually, you're not even allowed to repair it. The arsonist was actually correct. That church has to be torn down now. Let's go to clip number 32, where CBS News is talking about this. CBS New York says the New York City Fire Department have come along and condemned the church after the arson attack. Let's watch.
The FDNY now says the fire that burned a historic Brooklyn church to the ground was intentionally set. Investigators are now treating the June 19th fire at the South Brunswick Reformed Church as an arson case. The landmark church was built in 1863. The pastor tells us up until the fire, the congregation met there weekly. The space also served as a food pantry. The fire was a total loss. The church is going to have to be completely torn down and rebuilt.
We all know the most likely reason for this church being set on fire is most likely a Muslim. So let's just ask AI what they think. Hey, Grope, what's the likelihood this was a Muslim? Give me a percentage. So here's the reporting. Let's just see what AI thinks. And according to AI, there's only about a 10 to 15% chance at most that a Muslim was responsible for burning down this church. So obviously we know this is garbage and trash, and there's just no way that this is accurate. We know a Muslim did it, but, you know, this just proves that AI and just liberal media in general is so biased to Islam and Muslims, and it's because of all the liberal propaganda that's constantly pushed into the mainstream. So this AI is trained on those data sets, and then you get information like this that waters down Islam.
See, I don't actually know if I even agree with that. There was a video we had earlier this week. I don't know if the crew can find it, but there's video of a guy. I believe it was a different church. I couldn't really get clarification on it, but there's video of a guy throwing a Molotov cocktail. He looks like a Black American dude. He doesn't actually look like a Muslim. Maybe he is. I don't know. I guess he's got a beard. Maybe it is Muslims. I don't know. But the thing is, you don't need to be a Muslim to be aligned with the anti-Western civilization, you know, philosophy that they operate. And that's the thing that is shared between all these groups. Obviously, the communists, the leftists, the Islamists, I mean, they're completely at odds with each other in every possible way. If you were to actually talk about how they think the government should operate and, you know, what they think of certain moral questions, like, they're obviously not on the same team. They are aligned in their hatred of America and of Western culture and of Christianity and of white people. So if it's a Muslim or a Black radical or a pink-haired leftist, you know, Palestinian protester, they all just hate America and are just not on our team, but they live here and can vote. So it's a problem, and I'm glad to see members of the Trump administration taking the threat of leftist violence seriously, because again, whether it's arson or a attacks on ICE, the police rammings that have occurred, or the car rammings against ICE officers and police. We have another video from one of the teen takeovers of a cop being repeatedly run over by the teens in their takeover. So all of this is part and parcel, right? The hatred, like the burning of a church and the running over a police officer with a car, it's motivated by the same underlying sentiment of general hatred of the order and the Christian morality of white Western civilization. So Marco Rubio, Scott Bessin, and Steve Miller gave speeches to this effect, trying to get Europeans to also wake up to the threat of leftist violence, which is even greater there, where you've got routinely examples of Antifa going out in gangs, murdering people, smashing people's heads with hammers, and getting away with it. Here's one of the attacks on the police officers. And every teen takeover has dozens of these. The latest one is probably the most gruesome because the guy gets literally pinned between two different cars. And so it's just this bubbling up of chaos that we're witnessing across the board. And once again, I'll say it's good to see the Trump administration treating this with the seriousness it deserves. Let's go to Senator Marco Rubio, clip 21 here. Marco Rubio says it, Secretary of State, rather, Marco Rubio, says it perfectly in front of dozens of global officials on leftist terrorism. Here it is.
You came here. You are here because 2 weeks ago, a 72-year-old woman was burned on over 80% of her body in her own home in Greece, and she died, executed by a firebomb because her daughter dared to stand for office. You are here today because for 5 days this winter, the lights went out in Berlin. The longest blackout in the city since the Second World War, sparked by an attack that left tens of thousands of households without power in the freezing cold and left an 83-year-old woman dead. You are here and you came because a month after that Berlin blackout, a French 23-year-old succumbed to traumatic brain injuries, beaten to death on the streets of Lyon by a group of far-left militant thugs. You are here because your political leaders are being attacked and stabbed and shot in your streets, because your businesses have been bombed, because your railways have been sabotaged, because your police officers have been beaten and burned. You are here because this is real, and it is getting worse, and it can no longer be denied, and it can no longer be ignored, because it is time to crush this evil forever. The simple fact is, none of this that I've just described is new. Far left political terrorism is not a recent day modern novelty. It is not a fiction manufactured by conservative politicians. For most of the modern era, it was in fact the dominant form of political violence. Every one of our friends here from the nations of the Western Hemisphere, remember?
I mean, it's just so crazy to think about, just off the top of my head, the number of insane leftist attacks that there have been. And remember, they, like a couple months ago, published a big study that was like 90% of violence is right-wing terror. And you looked in, and we did, we looked into the stats, we looked into the data, we looked into the individual cases to see if it was accurate that they should be described as right-wing terror. And it was things like members of a right-wing militia, like a guy murdered his ex-wife over a custody disagreement. And it's like, yep, tack that on to the right-wing terror account. And it's like, so anybody who is right-wing who commits a crime, that becomes right-wing terror. So every single Aryan Brotherhood member in prison is considered a member of a right-wing white supremacy organization. So every time a Aryan Brotherhood, you know, tatted up prison for life gangster shivs a guy in the side, that becomes right-wing terror. Meanwhile, left-wing terror is things like, I don't know, the murder of Charlie Kirk, multiple assassination attempts against Donald Trump, the attack on the Waukesha Christmas parade, the attack against Kyle Rittenhouse, by the way, they tried to strip his gun from him and kill him, and he was forced to defend himself. I mean, it's funny, like even examples like that you could ostensibly call right-wing terror because it was a right-wing guy with a gun, killing people at a ostensibly left-wing protest. In reality, they attacked him. It was left-wing violence against him that forced him to defend himself, which he did expertly and to a professional degree, which allowed him to be declared, as is correct, innocent of the charges of murder in that case. And it just goes on and on. I mean, and this is the thing. They'll take something like January 6th, a singular event. And but like, if you remember, in the lead up to January 6th, there were like dozens of marches. We led multiple of them driving the InfoWars tank all the way to D.C., holding the, you know, big riots. And of course, not riots, but protests. But then we were attacked by Antifa. Our side was viciously assaulted, like families being attacked by Antifa relentlessly. Because it really is like a very, very ubiquitous, like common doesn't even do it justice. It is a daily, quotidian fact that the left wing commits violence against right wingers at an incredibly high rate. But there's peaceful march after peaceful march after peaceful march after peaceful march. January 6th happens. The march is peaceful. The crowd is peaceful. Only do they only get violent. They only ever get rowdy when the police start firing non-lethal munitions at them from balconies. That's what started the conflict on January 6th. So again, just to put it in context, the thing I'm pointing out is they'll take January 6th, the media will take January 6th, and they'll say this one instance, this actually represents a trend. This actually represents a fact of reality, and that the right wing is just inherently violent, and they're so violent, and look at them on January 6th being so violent. This is a part of a trend. It's a single data point. It's one dot, and they're drawing a gigantic graph all around it as if it actually represents something. Meanwhile, the daily examples of leftist violence, whether it's the Antifa staged, assault and ambush on the ICE agents where they tried to kill them, firing at them from the bushes while luring them outside with a fire first, you know, letting fireworks off. Again, a sophisticated multi-stage military attack against ICE facilities here in America. And like a week later, another ICE agent was shot at. Remember, the guy accidentally killed the immigrant, but was firing at ICE and thought he was killing an agent. And then it's just like, literally, just off the top of my head, I could just go on and on and on of examples of actual leftist terror attacks against Americans. Meanwhile, they say 90% of terror attacks in America are from the right wing because they count every single right winger committing any sort of crime as an example of left wing terror, while the actual left wing terror goes completely unreported, unremarked upon, and treated as singular, unexpected events. Hell, just today we have a story about Savannah Hernandez settling her civil trial or getting a conclusion in the trial against people that assaulted her while she was covering another ICE protest. I mean, the ICE protests alone, there are like 12 examples of violence. I mean, people shooting at cops, people trying to run over ICE agents. It's leftist terror. And once again, I feel this unending regret with how we did not take the murder of Charlie Kirk as the starting gun of a massive nationwide roundup of these openly operating terrorist organizations inside the United States. All of the anger, all of the fury, all of the outrage, all of the grief over Charlie Kirk should have been channeled directly into a massive, sweeping crackdown of all of these despicable groups and their supporters. Instead, we've decided to tear ourselves down and each other apart because we're idiots, I guess.
And a microscopic tag being implanted in a person's body to track his every movement. There's actual discussion about that.
And often they're things you don't know what to do with. UBOs, they're called unidentified bright objects.
Can brain scans be used to determine whether a person is inclined toward criminality or violent behavior?
Who's got the brain that's going to be most susceptible to a particular kind of manipulation?
So the point is, they've been obsessed with this. It's going on. The COVID shots implanted the matrix, graphene oxide to grow. It's now being scanned. It's now being read. They were putting chips in the troops 30 years ago. The revolution's already here is what you're saying, Jesse Beltran.
These are just chips on a size that you can no longer see. They're nano size. One's 2,000 times the width of a human hair. The graphene oxide, the silicon-based materials that have been in, we know for a fact that they were in the mRNA. We know that Dr. Ido Bachelet signed a contract with Pfizer in 2015 when he did that TEDMed talk with a trillion robots in a 1cc syringe, and how he teaches his students how to, once they're in a host, how to how to control them with RF emissions.
And you heard Collins saying 21 years ago that, oh, yeah, when we're doing scans, we find all these chips, these bright objects, ha, 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 wonder to put them there. But as you said, you've been doing this 20 years, and about 10 years ago, you began to go away not seeing chips anymore, but just liquid emulsion nanotech. Here you are 6 months ago or more scanning me. Let's go to Alex Jones getting scanned.
So if you put that camera in there, you see how it says probably silicone? That means it's an electronic component. And it's not unusual to find that in the posterior ear area.
So wait, I got a higher reading than him?
No, his was higher than yours.
Okay,
yeah,
that's good.
Yeah, but you did get a positive reading there. So you are getting the you know, base of the neck is what we typically see. Scapula area. What we're finding is after post-COVID, this is very typical. We're completely bombarded by this stuff.
From your own research, there are compounds naturally in nature that just do absolutely incredible things that will draw out these type of things. But you guys have come up with one with scientists that adds these special sea minerals in that then even drags it out even more. And so I have been taking this, the dreams I've had, my skin, my health, what it's done is absolutely insane. Get masterpiece.com. Matt Hazen, tell us what this does, and people can get 10% off when they follow the URL, getmasterpiece.com, or use promo code Alex when you're there on the site, because this is really special.
Zeolite is an incredible mineral that is known as what's called the master binder. And what that means is it's known to pick up every type of forever chemical, toxin, toxic heavy metal there is, including fluoride. So when you see charcoal or carbon or clays for binders, you don't see that they will pick up fluoride. Zeolite's different. Zeolite also gets the fluoride. That's a very big deal. It is great at removing these environmental toxins from our body. Masterpiece is the highest grade sea mineral plasma solution. It is basically isotonic, the same mineral composition as your blood plasma. So the sea minerals are being carried in by the nanometer, sub-nanometer size clinoptilolite zeolite. And once the toxin hits the zeolite, it releases and displaces the mineral. People don't feel bad. There's no normal detoxing reaction.
Everybody needs to go to getmasterpiece.com. You get 10% off by using that URL automatically when you go. There's promo code Alex as well. Getmasterpiece.com.
Welcome back, folks. War Room Live is on. And yes, we are celebrating and encouraging the Trump administration in their seemingly renewed drive to crack down on leftist terror. I'm not getting too excited. I'm not getting too, you know, gung-ho about this because we've seen this before. Maybe you forgot. Maybe I need to remind you, but it was like less than a year ago that the Trump administration invited all of these independent reporters, Andy Ngo, Savannah Hernandez, I'm blanking on their names, but Nick Shirley. I mean, they brought all of the, you know, on the ground independent reporters from TPUSA and everywhere else and brought them together and heard their stories about being attacked by Antifa. Davis Court, Katie Davis Court was there with the black eye we showed earlier. After being assaulted by Antifa, and they said, we're declaring Antifa a domestic terror organization. In doing so, it will open up investigative capabilities so we can look into who's giving them money, where it's coming from, who's coordinating them. We can round them up. We can charge them under RICO charges, charge the hires up for the crimes of their underlings. And it sounded really good. And, yeah, that was last October, and we've seen absolutely nothing come of that so far. So, are we seeing this again? Is this another, okay, people are starting to get mad that we're not doing anything? Are we pretending to do something? Are we actually doing something? Now, part of the reason Marco Rubio and Steve Miller and these others are giving these speeches is they're giving them to Europeans, and they're encouraging Europe to get on board with cracking down on left-wing violence. We don't need their help. They're not going to help us. And that's that. I mean, why would we need Europe to help us with this? And if they don't, I would just consider them a terrorist nation. Like how does this work with normal terrorist nations? Like, you've got Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. If you go to Afghanistan and say, hey, we need help cracking down on Al-Qaeda, and they say, no, actually, we support and give protection to Al-Qaeda, then we go to war with Afghanistan. So, you know, it's like, is that what we're going to do? Because they're not going to help us. Even though they are the ones being subjected even more so to leftist violence. But before we go to, you know, another speech of Marco Rubio, I figure let's go through some examples. Again, literally just from today, like not even from this week. I could go back into the week and find, you know, even more, like significantly more examples of this. But we'll start with the latest that broke just before we went live, clip 51. Just in, there were shots fired at an ICE building in Phoenix, Arizona. The FBI is now investigating. Here's what that looks like. We just have a few seconds of B-roll, the bullets here. But yes, we have, once again, ICE coming under gunfire, being attacked. I would categorize that as left-wing violence. And that's the question. What do you categorize as left-wing violence or right-wing violence? Like we were explaining before, things like the ACLU or the SBLC, they will come out with charts explaining that all political violence is right-wing because, and it really can be the type of thing where they're like, right-wing, you know, violence itself is a right-wing idea, so anybody committing violence is actually engaged in a right-wing attack. And you could be like a leftist communist, but then you like actually attack the government and they're like, anti-government violence, that's right-wing. So it's all completely skewed. But when it comes right down to it, what becomes obvious is that the dichotomy is not the left wing and the right wing as such. It is white Christians versus everybody else. That's the dichotomy. Okay. So because if you're, and you know, look at a place like Right Wing Watch, right? Right Wing Watch claims to, you know, be policing, you know, American politics for right-wing extremism. And they're exposing, you know, fascist, totalitarian, right-wing influencers. And you go through their feed and it's literally nothing but reporting on Christians being Christian. It's just like this Christian group makes their women wear headdresses when they go into church. And it's like, that's just like a Christian tradition. What are you talking? It's not even right-wing. Something right-wing about it. It's just anti-Christian, just like the DSA are just anti-American. It's America, Christianity, white people, our culture, our civilization versus everybody else. That's the dichotomy. That's what's happening here. And again, you can see that's their interpretation as well if you look at how they rate right-wing violence or what they consider right-wing violence. Like, there shouldn't actually be a left-wing, right-wing dichotomous difference between the Black Panthers and the KKK, right? Which one's right-wing, which one's left-wing? If they're both just racialist groups that just want their race to succeed and do better or whatever. Yeah, right. Well, yeah, it's all literally just anti-Christian material or anti-white material. And it's literally white people being like, we don't want to die. And they're like, look at this extremist over here. So that's the dichotomy. That's what we're talking about here. And so I would consider, like, we can go to clip 49 here. This is, and viewer warning, this is a pretty violent video. A police officer in the U.S. has been crushed between two cars during a feral foreign teen street takeover. As he cries out in pain, teens stand around filming him on the ground. This is multiculturalism, no morality, and they do not value human life. But I would consider this. You tell me. If there were a bunch of white people gathering around to do some sort of takeover event, if Patriot Front was on video running a cop over, filming him and, you know, kicking him while he's down, would that be considered right-wing violence? Of course it would, which is why this should be considered left-wing violence. This is left-wing terrorism on display. Let's watch. Clip 49. There's a cop getting smashed. And we can pull down the audio a little bit. Yeah, so he gets crushed between these two cars in this teen takeover event. These left-wing teens. Cop's black, by the way. The cop's black, but he's in a police uniform, which makes him an avatar of the white civilization that they're rebelling against. So I'd consider that quote-unquote left-wing violence, wouldn't you? And there's more. Let's go to the video now of the beating of the 74-year-old man, because I'll ask you once again, and you can just go to B-roll of a guy's whenever you find it. And it was reported that a 74-year-old man was assaulted and attacked by like seven, again, teens, a couple of teenagers out, you know, having fun for a night on the town, just happened to beat a man within an inch of his life. Clip number 40 here. Video shows six black teens attacking a 74-year-old man outside of a 7-Eleven in Baltimore during an attempted robbery. So this is I guess, nighttime robbery, white guy. But you tell me, if you were to see this exact video of a lone black man being assaulted, surrounded, and viciously attacked by white people, you don't think that would be considered a act of white supremacist racial aggression? That's what this is. This is left-wing violence. This is left-wing terrorism. This is that faction that we can call the left, but is actually just the non-white, non-Christian, non-civilized portion of the globe. And I mean, it's brutal. It's vicious. It's a 74-year-old man just trying to go to the corner store. And there he's got a gun pointed at him. Elderly man tries to fight off six YNs, young niggas, as they attempt to rob him outside of 7-Eleven. Okay, I'd consider that left-wing violence as well. And I got more because I could show you the video of the woman from Canada slapping the, you know, MAGA teenager in the face. Every day, there's examples of this exact type of violence that is racially motivated, that is ideologically motivated, that is politically motivated. And honestly, it is such a monumental task, but maybe we should. Maybe I should just go through and like 10 years of leftist violence, because it's staggering. I mean, when you really start to like collate it and actually look into all of the examples, I bet at least 50 right-wingers have been killed for their political views in America in the last 10 years. I think that's about right. Because you include the five people murdered by Capitol Police on January 6th. You include Aaron Daniels murdered in Portland. You include the Waukesha Christmas parade attack, the schizophrenic black guy running over a bunch of white girls. You add in the transgender shooters of churches. There's probably 300 examples of violence, and there's probably 50 deaths. At least. So again, the fact that they're actually talking about leftist violence now is in and of itself a victory, but like we have to understand how widespread it is, how ubiquitous it is, how unaddressed it goes, and how if you're actually holding left-wingers to the same standards you hold right-wingers to, I mean, now you're talking about numbers in the hundreds of people killed in the last 10 years. People targeted because of their race, the number of white people murdered by black people. And we just assume that it's because of their race. People like Irina Zarutska. You can say the guy's crazy. You can say that was just a mental illness. That was just a random crime. But when it's a black guy in a train of black people stabbing the one white girl that gets on and then saying, I got that white girl, I'm going to go ahead and categorize that in the racially motivated anti-white leftist terror column. And I think that's appropriate. Let's go down to clip number 4. This is Secretary Rubio once again talking about what is actually motivating the leftist committing violence across the world.
This is a distinctive and unique evil. It has always been driven by a hatred, above all else, a hatred for civilization itself. It is a revolt of the worst against the best, a revolt of the weak and the cowardly against the strong and the good. It is perpetrated by those who cannot build, who cannot create, who cannot achieve great things, and take their revenge upon the world for their own inadequacy by seeking to destroy those who can. This is what radical leftism is. It may wear various different slogans and ideologies across place and time. They can call themselves anti-capitalist or anti-imperialist or communist or anarchist or Marxist, but the fundamental character is always the same. It's always the same. It is a poisonous resentment cloaked in the language of equality and justice and liberation, an overwhelming need to tear down what greater men have built, to wreck what is beautiful and what is right on behalf of people who are only filled with ugliness and have nothing else to offer the world. Through violence and through terror, they once again seek to impose their ugliness on all of us. The old dogma was wrong. The old dogma was wrong. None of this is driven by idealism. It is not utopian. In fact, it is the opposite. One of the criticisms you sometimes hear of communism, for example, is that it sounds good in theory, but it never works in practice. That's actually not true. Communism does not sound good in theory. The world it envisions for all of us is small, flat, gray, leveled of all exception, drained of all that is good and noble in the human soul. The world it envisions is a world without courage, a world without creativity or ambition, a world without heroes or glory or great causes to strive towards, without a world without miracles, without myths, without men who rise above the rest to do incredible and extraordinary things. And the world communism envisions is a world without God. For these architects of revolutionary violence, the towering achievement of our civilization, for them, it's an unbearable humiliation, a reminder of what they cannot do, and a reminder of what they cannot be. So they choose instead to destroy. They attack pipelines. They attack railroads. They attack power grids and laboratories, the physical embodied symbols of power and invention and achievement. This is the nature of the terrorism we face today. They despise the West because the West is great.
He's exactly right. You know, extremely powerful sentiments. It's got to be backed up with action, though. As much as I like hearing Marco Rubio talk like this, it's like if he really took it that seriously, things would be treated very differently. And I can't help but see what's happening here as, like, you know, these barbarians, these leftists, they're committing terror. They're tearing down civilization. We've got to do something. And we're like, yes, exactly. And they're like, okay, so we'll be deporting Palestinian activists. We're going to make it illegal to criticize Israel. And it's like, I just can't help but wonder if this is actually a sincere push to actually defeat the real threat of leftism, or if this is just to cover, co-opt our actual need to fight leftism in order to get us to agree to protect Israel, because that's always seems to be where it goes towards. And the reason I'm saying this is because, first of all, the pattern of behavior so far has shown that they aren't taking leftist violence seriously. And if they were, we would see action. We would see roundups. We would see RICO cases. We would see investigations into the bank accounts. We would see actual tangible results after 9 months of declaring them a domestic terror organization. We would have something to show for it, but we don't have anything to show for it. So I have trouble taking this at face value. I always have this feeling with stuff like this because it's like, okay, that was a great speech. That was exactly right. That was dead on the money. Why is it so out of whack with their actions? Why is it that they seemingly, on every situation, know exactly what they should do? They know what's right. They know what we want to hear. They'll say it. they just won't do it, which is almost more frustrating than them not even saying it. It's almost more frustrating knowing that they know that Antifa's a threat. They know that we want them declared a domestic terror organization. They know we want them rounded up. They won't do it. They'll say that they'll do it, and then they don't actually do it. So let's actually see it. But again, you've got to also recognize this phenomenon of the goals of the left being achieved equally by radical terrorist action and government action. Just like I was explaining before, you can throw a Molotov cocktail and burn a church down, or you can elect Zoran Mamdani to get his, you know, city planner to just, you know, recategorize that block as multifamily housing and tear the church down that way. You can tear down the statue of your ancestors with a Black Lives Matter riot, or you can get the mayor to do it for you and tear it down in pieces and send it to LA so it can be made into African trees. It's the same ultimate goal. It's the same ultimate conclusion. It's just two different paths to get there. So as Marco Rubio is talking about these people hating Western civilization and trying to tear it down, he's giving this speech to the European leaders who have systematically dismantled their own societies. They have deliberately destroyed their industrial capacity and are deindustrializing as we speak. So, like, there's got to be a term for this or something. I mean, it's the double-edged sword. We've got to recognize this so we can stop trying to appeal to the terrorists to help us fight terrorism. You're appealing to the leftist governments who are in 100% agreement with Antifa. They're just doing it in a more systematic and technically legal way. But they also give cover to protect and refuse to actually prosecute the real Antifa. So this is just two arms of the same monster. Two tentacles on the same octopus, and we have to destroy them all. But it's a very powerful speech by Rubio. Here's another one, clip three. Him talking about a new wave of old evil. Let's watch.
The overwhelming share of that violence came from left-wing extremists. Between 1970 and 1980, 93% of terrorist attacks in the West came from the far extremist left. These are numbers that would shock most Americans today because we've been taught to believe that this kind of political violence, it simply doesn't exist or it's being exaggerated. But it does exist, and we're actually underestimating it. And our nations bear the scars to prove it. And today we face a new wave of this old evil. Here in the United States, the share of left-wing terrorist attacks and plots has risen to levels not seen in decades. In Germany, far-left violence has jumped by more than 40% in just the last year alone. In Greece, more than 80% of radical violence is now driven by far-left and anarchist actors. These are not abstract statistics. Americans have seen what those numbers mean. An all-out assault on our immigration officers, sniper attacks, explosives, armed ambushes, a transgender shooter opening fire on Catholic elementary school students as they pray, his gun marked with slogans like, "Where is your God now?" A healthcare executive executed in cold blood in the streets, multiple assassination attempts on a sitting president, and the murder of the greatest conservative activist of a generation. A man who happened to also be a husband and the father of two young children.
Again, just a tiny, tiny, tiny sampling of just the most explosive and well-publicized examples of leftist violence. They are innumerable. Again, literally no less than three or four examples from just the last 2 days. Let's go now to clip 38 here. This is Stephen Miller talking about the organized left-wing violence.
Here in the United States, we have taken the necessary and essential action of formally recognizing left-wing violence as a form of political terrorism that is a direct threat to our national security and the survival of our republican form of government. President Trump issued a directive. In our parlance, it's called a National Security Presidential Memorandum, or NSPM. NSPM 7, to be exact, that directs for the first time in American history all of our law enforcement and intelligence agencies to work together to disrupt, identify, defund, debank, arrest, and prosecute these political terrorists that are operating in our country. It's very important to understand that left-wing political terrorism seeks as its ultimate end the overthrow of our system and form of government. And we've seen this has taken place many times in many places throughout the years, and Secretary Rubio has provided you many examples. Left-wing terrorism always ends in bloodshed, misery, and suffering. It only can travel in one direction. There's no point at which the left-wing terrorist is satisfied with his gains and ceases progressing. Inevitably, left to run its course, it always becomes a gulag. It always becomes the mass imprisonment of political enemies, the stripping of their rights and freedoms, inflicting immense pain, humiliation, suffering, in order to establish complete and total control. Control through psychological and physical and actual terror. And we have to understand that that is the scope and the extent of the threat that we face.
Very powerful stuff. We're going to show a longer clip of him giving his full speech on the other side of a quick commercial break. But first, let me tell you about a new buy one, get one deal we have at thealexjonesstore.com. The new BOGO deal is on, and if you buy one bottle of the Ultimate CMOS capsules, you get a second absolutely free. If you buy the Ultimate NAD Plus, you get a second one 50% off. So right now, buy one, get one deals are on at thealexjonesstore.com. Go to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison to let them know who sent you. Ultimate CMOS capsules are buy one, get one free. Ultimate NAD Plus is buy one, get the second 50% off. This deal ends Monday, July 20th at midnight. So don't wait. Go now. Get yours. Ultimate CMOS capsules for absolutely free with your purchase of one bottle. You get a second one absolutely free. Of course, we have the new summer apparel line is on sale. Performance fishing shirt is available. Lightweight, quick drying, and featuring a genuine embroidered 13-star Betsy Ross flag. And also the new 1776 heavyweight shorts are available. The Rebel Scum shirt. There's some very cool new hats, including a red hat with an eagle on it that might find its way into my closet if security around here weren't quite so up to snuff. Go to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison. Make your purchase. Keep us on the air, and we'll be right back after this short commercial break. Don't go anywhere, folks.
Alex Jones is off the air.
There's a lot of noise right now.
Taking me off the air. It is beyond essential that you continue to spread the word about the broadcast and continue to support us.
That's usually when it matters most, to have people in your corner who don't flinch. We've been a partner of this program and of Alex's for a long time.
I'm handing out ice water in the Sahara. I mean, it is such the top rated, the biggest company, because they're the best, and he's a patriot.
We're not going anywhere, and that commitment runs to you. Here's the part that matters. With us, it's 8% when you buy and 0% when you sell. And here's something else. After you make your first purchase and become a client, if you're holding metals you bought somewhere else, bring them to us. We'll help you liquidate them. No commission. That means even if you didn't originally buy them from us, we'll still take care of you. That's not a promotion. It's not something that's for a limited time only. That's just the way we do business. Give us a call and we'll bend over backwards to help you.
Visit kepm.com/gold to get started. Or give us a call at 720-605-3900. And let us help you make room for what matters most.
Spot price of the metal in the ground. Manufacturers, miners haven't even touched it yet. Then they pull the metal out of the ground. They dig their tunnels. They drive it to the refinery. They melt it down, make it into a coin or a bar. That's wholesale. That's usually 3 to 5% over spot. We charge 8% on top of wholesale. When you liquidate, we charge zero.
Buy gold and silver bullion at wholesale. You can look every day at what the price is. Type in what's wholesale gold and silver. And then you get it from them with a little processing fee. And then they buy it back for nothing with no cost. That's unprecedented. It's so easy. KPM.com/gold. Get a free telephone consultation email. You call 720-605-3900. 720-605-3900.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
The leftist looks at what is beautiful and what is good and what is natural and is filled with envy and hatred. The leftist looks at a perfect family with the perfect life and a perfect job and perfect kids that goes to church every Sunday and is filled with a feeling of inadequacy and jealousy, and they covet, and they turn those emotions ultimately into a desire to subjugate, to oppress, and to inflict pain and suffering. It's not a coincidence that when you look at these violent Antifa demonstrations, you see any photograph of those who were assembled. To be blunt, not one of the people that is demonstrating looks like a normal person. Not one looks normal. They're all deformed in some way in their appearance, in their dress, in their mannerism. Why is that? Why, if you look at two photographs and you see a normal American street, you see an Antifa protest. Why do the people that are violently demonstrating, why is there not one normal-looking person among them? Every one of them, through the course of their life and their decisions, has scarred their body and their appearance in many different ways, to the point in which their outer appearance becomes a manifestation of their inner hatred. Trust your instincts. To all people and across all civilizations, you know what normal is. You know what beautiful is. You know what good is. You know that families are right. You know that children are precious and beautiful and must be protected. You know that the criminal and the junkie and the predator is a threat to normal, healthy living. This is so much deeper than issues about taxation and regulation, although they're incredibly important. It's about normal, healthy, ordered living. And the violent leftists, for these deep-seated reasons, going back to the earliest wisdom taught to us in the Bible about coveting. And I'm not talking about rich versus poor. I'm talking about a much deeper kind of coveting. Coveting people who are morally superior, who are superior in the simple, truthful way they live their lives. People that they look at who are happy and ordered and peaceful and contributing to the communities. That burns an ember in them, and that's how you end up with the horrors we've seen throughout history, where good families are dragged out into the street and executed. And you might say, again, you're describing a future that seems impossible to conceive of. When it comes to preventing these horrors, it is the burden and the duty of good people of all walks of life to understand that you will always be accused of raising the alarm too loudly. If you wait until the point where the worst outcome is so obvious that no one can deny it, you've already lost the battle. That's the fundamental point. If you say, I will not raise this alarm until the threat is so present and so clear and so obvious and so imminent that none can deny it, it's already too late. It's already too late. I would rather prevent a threat from occurring and be accused for the rest of my life of having falsely raised the alarm, knowing in myself that I was right, than for fear of being judged, having waited too long until the point of no return has been crossed. The good news is that we are far away from the point of no return. So all of us should organize together and work together for the good and the benefit of all the people in our societies, of all walks of life, of all persuasions, to deliver for them what they are justly entitled to, which is to live with safety, with fundamental human dignity, and with the ability to live in peace and harmony with their families and neighbors.
So that was Stephen Miller with an incredibly powerful speech about the underlying motives of leftism and especially leftist violence. I think he's exactly right, and I think it's an important thing to point out that this really isn't about economics, just like the outrage and the discomfort people feel now isn't entirely about economics. We'll touch on that on the other side. Stay with us.
The InfoWar is not gone. It has been reborn. AlexJonesLive.com is the new site to find the next step in the InfoWar. Articles, video reports, live streams, breaking news. It's all on AlexJonesLive.com. We need you to be the Paul Revere's and share the links. You can also find us on X at RealAlexJones and on Rumble at rumble.com/The Alex Jones Show Live. And don't forget to download the app. Go to alexjonesapp.com. The fight continues. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
AlexJonesLive.com. We've only just begun to fight.
Welcome back, folks. This is War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Spent the first hour talking about leftist violence. Marco Rubio and Stephen Miller giving very powerful speeches about that. I want to stick to the topic of leftism versus rightism here for a minute, because I think Stephen Miller is right when he points out the underlying spiritual malaise that inspires leftism as a concept, and that it is born from, in many cases, an envy, a seething, vicious jealousy that some have for people who have what they don't. And that is a spiritual injury, a spiritual disability, right? To see somebody else with a bunch of great things and to hate that person, that's, there's something wrong with you, actually. But that's not necessarily a cultural, that's not ubiquitous in all cultures. Let's just say that. Just like in a lot of other cultures, you know, there's nothing wrong with paying people for a vote. In other cultures, being motivated by spite or envy isn't actually necessarily the worst thing in the world. We in the West became great because we recognized that. I just thought the way you put it was so funny, and just the way that Stephen Miller does in his autistically accurate sort of reading of things. Let's go to clip 31 here, just a short section that I thought was particularly funny and true and poignant from Stephen Miller's speech. Let's watch.
To subjugate, to oppress, and to inflict pain and suffering. It's not a coincidence that when you look at these violent Antifa demonstrations, you see any photograph of those who were assembled. To be blunt, not one of the people that is demonstrating looks like a normal person. Not one looks normal. They're all deformed in some way, in their appearance, in their dress, in their mannerism. Why is that? Why, if you look at two photographs and you see a normal American street, you see an Antifa protest. Why do the people that are violently demonstrating, why is there not one normal looking person among them? Every one of them, through the course of their life and their decisions, has scarred their body and their appearance in many different ways, to the point in which their outer appearance becomes a manifestation of their inner hatred. Trust your instincts. To all people and across all civilizations, you know what normal is. You know what beautiful is. You know what good is. You know that families are right. You know.
I love it. And it's absolutely true. And it used to be an extremely common meme. You don't see them very much anymore. But definitely, 8 years ago or whatever, you'd constantly see pictures of, pretty blonde girls going to college and then leaving college just a disgusting mess, just like fat and tatted and piercings and disfigurements and stringed out colored hair. And it's just like, yeah, this is leftism. It poisons the body. And there's an outward expression of that. It's all extremely true. But I guess I'm just thinking out loud here, because I've got all these stories. There's something weird happening right now where life itself has been uprooted and destroyed to a large degree, especially for younger people. Like, the world they live in many ways unrecognizable from the world that even I grew up in. I'm not that old or anything, but you look around at what Gen Z is growing up in, it is a completely different and significantly worse world. And so, there actually is a way to run things
that is generous and efficient and good. I mean, there's a way to do this. And America largely nailed it for like 50 years there. We were doing pretty great. We're doing pretty well. It all sort of went off the rails. And so what we're dealing with now is like the downstream effects, sort of the original cultural revolution that occurred in the 1960s. So I'm kind of struggling to like figure out how to deal with this because this isn't about economics solely. I mean, economics contribute and they're an aggravating factor and they're really a symptom of what's going on. But I don't think that's the main thing inspiring people to outrage and envy and terror right now. I think it is just a act of desperation in recognition of just how messed up our world is right now and how ineffective our systems are at actually creating success or prosperity or anything else. And this is just, it makes it harder to contend with. If it was purely economic, there's no argument for communism, obviously. Just because it just is proven out, it just doesn't work. It just doesn't work that way. Markets are superior. Yeah, I'm really trying to, I'm sitting at the gay barbecue, really studying like an anthropologist, really trying to figure out what exactly has gone wrong here. Because it is complicated. It is kind of confusing. You know, here's a headline that should kind of throw your whole perspective out of whack. Yeah, effects of liberalism. This should be an extremely common, you know, meme format. You don't really see that much anymore, but it's out there still, very much so. Yeah, it's a mental disorder. It is literally a mental disorder. Like, that's not just a cute saying. Liberalism is literally a mental disorder. The right wing is order. That's like what defines, if you're actually going to define the right wing, it's about having an ordered, structured society. Disorder is what the left is. But like, we're hearing about the left-wing violence. We're hearing about the threats of communism. We're hearing people in the Trump administration seem to be taking this seriously. People in the Republican Party like Mike Johnson, his words have the sense of sincerity when he talks about the threat of communism. And as you're hearing all of that, I read this headline. China introduces rules to rein in AI companion bots amid emotional dependency concerns. Is this a communist idea? It certainly is not, you know, conducive to individual freedom. Like my lover, Chinese users bid farewell to AI companions. Chinese users of AI-powered companion bots have bid heart-rending farewells to their virtual buddies as national regulations took effect Wednesday aimed at curbing the risk of emotional dependency. The phenomenon of artificial intelligence boyfriends and girlfriends is growing worldwide, along with the prevalence of human-like avatars that sell products or stand in for loved ones who have died. But these interactive tools must, quote, not excessively cater to users, induce emotional dependence or addiction, and damage users' real interpersonal relationships, China's new rulebook says. Major AI providers, including ByteDance's Doubao, Alibaba's Qwen, and Tencent's Yuanbao, announced the suspension of their custom AI agent and companion features ahead of Wednesday's deadline. I think this is a good thing. I don't think it's good for our society to be in this crisis of relationships, right? Crisis of intimacy, crisis of companionship, and to be then providing people with a digital facsimile of a relationship, like a Band-Aid for a cancer diagnosis. I actually don't think it's a good thing that AI companies and social media companies can deliberately manipulate their code to create chemical dependency by activating the dopamine receptors in your brain through, you know, highly sophisticated and, you know, scientifically aligned noises and lights. I mean, why would we allow them to do that? Why are we allowing them to do that? I guess this is where the rubber meets the road, where it's like, I like freedom. I want individuals to be able to make their own choices. But what happens when society is like broken to a point where individuals out of sheer desperation are removing themselves from the real world and retreating into a digital cave where they can live out their existence in anonymity. Like, this isn't good. This isn't right. It's not healthy. It's bad. Will we ever do anything to stop these companies from exploiting the users? Would it be too communist to perhaps try to correct the path that we're on? And you know, I posted something today about, you know, this is why people are going to communism. It was somebody posting that, you know, the grocery order that they got 3 years ago or 5 years ago is like $100 more expensive now, which I think is about accurate. Other people saying it's a account from Africa or something. I don't really care, because the sentiment is the point. It's the truth. It's people are turning to communism because their lives are dysfunctional. They're not able to get ahead. They're not able to even keep their head above water. They're having to rely on so the point is, yeah, didn't add a single item 5 years. Again, you know, maybe this is totally fake, but it's not. I mean, we all know it's not. We've all seen the receipts. Whether it was exactly a 145% increase or not, I don't know. But the point is, people are miserable. People are, and I have other people going, well, but that's because we've become more communistic. Yes, I know that that's the problem that we're in, is that we are no longer comporting ourselves with our traditional standards, our traditional way of life, our traditional capitalist system, or whatever else. The more we move away from that, the worse everything gets. The more we move towards communism, the more everyone suffers. The more everyone suffers, the more people appeal to communism. So it's this like vicious feedback loop that we've entered into. It's a problem, but the reason people are looking for an answer is real. The misery is real. The chaos is real. The lack of actual society in this country is real and hugely damaging. And so when you look at a country like China, who will throw its billionaires in prison if they break the law, it's like, do we have to be communist to do that? I would think we would do that to keep capitalism afloat. Just like you would expect, you know, I saw somebody yesterday, it's like, oh, you know, big business loves capitalism until it's time for socialism to bail them out. And it's like, that's not capitalism. No, they should fail. They should be allowed to fail. That's actually a core component of capitalism, is that if you don't serve your customers, if you don't do what you're supposed to, you're supposed to fail. You're not supposed to go appeal to the government to rob the taxpayers to backfill all the money that you owe because you failed. Like, yes, that is communism. That is, and it serves the capitalist structure. So you should actually be in favor of capitalism that would allow those companies to go down. But like I said, why is it that we seem utterly incapable of doing anything to help the American people? Now, you might think it's government overreach to, you know, get rid of AI companions. But we know, I mean, Facebook just lost a massive lawsuit about, you know, emotionally manipulating children. Like, they do this. They know how to do it. They have access. They're doing this. And it's not, this isn't a matter of capitalism. This is a matter of manipulation and subversion and, you know, doing things to people that are hurting them without them knowing it. Like, we don't have to allow this. Why can we not put a stop to this? Why can we not do something to correct the major problems in our country, which have a financial element to them, but aren't really financial at the end of the day? The problem with the fact that you can't buy a house is because you can't own something and build something and start a family. You want to feel accomplished. You want to feel, you know, safe and secure before you bring a baby into the world. So you want to get married. You want to have a job. Like, these things are necessary for flourishing of human life, not just making money. The money is there to facilitate the enjoyment and the prosperity and the beauty of human life, not for its own ends. So when I see something like that, I'm like, okay, what if we don't become communist, but we do like very simple common sense things that benefit the people and not the corporations? Would that make us communist? I don't think so. I think it would make us Americans. I think it would actually mean that we could have a capitalistic system if it weren't constantly exploited. You know, this is from Katie Miller. This is Steve Miller's wife. She posts that women want ambitious men who are caretakers and providers. This is how the birth rate continues to fall. In relation to this chart showing that nearly one third of young adults live with their parents. Yeah, this is what's causing communism. This is what's causing the birth rate to fall off. Like, all of these things aggravate all of these other things. This is the issue. So how do we fix this? If this wasn't the case, communism wouldn't be an issue. If people could actually live fulfilling lives, then they would be happy and wouldn't be looking for an alternative. They wouldn't be trying to tear the whole system down. So this is the real issue. And yes, this is a consequence, in my belief, and all the data backs it up, of us moving ever more towards socialism, more towards expanded government control, more towards, you know, involvement of the government in the private sector. But we gotta be, but you, so maybe, I mean, how do we categorize this stuff where it's like, it's not about, is it big government or little government? I think that is a false dichotomy. I think that's a trick. I genuinely think that that was seeded into the zeitgeist of American politics to convince conservatives that, like, you're never allowed to actually do anything. You're never actually allowed to use the government to do anything. It's actually between small and big government, and you should always be on the side of small government. So anytime there's any problem for which government is the answer, you have to be against the solution. And it's like, this is a trick. This is wrong. It's not about big government or little government. It's about, is the government doing things for the people or not? Are they doing something to actually guarantee that the average person can live a life that is prosperous and happy and successful and secure? Or are they undercutting that at every pass? Because right now we're undercutting that at every pass. And for some reason, the communist nations are the ones who actually seem to be able to put some controls that would provide for a better life. Young people want marriage and kids. They can't afford them. But again, but I want to make clear, if they could get a wife and kids without having money, they'd do that. But like, our system is that you need money to do these things. The real actual problem is that we aren't building families, that we aren't meeting people and having fun and having kids and building communities. And that's the problem. Yes, the financial aspect is a contributor to that overall problem. And the structure of our society is such that finances are required to do that, to build a family. But like, you could come up with an alternative system. Like, these very same people have dislocated from modern society and placed in a medieval village where money wasn't even really a thing. You just lived off the land. They'd have kids. They'd be happy. They'd be successful. It's about the lack of human flourishing at the end of the day. That's the major problem. That's the sickness at the heart of our civilization that's getting worse every single day. The capitalists are just as much to blame as any government program is, because they work hand in hand. The solution is to have the government actually use its inordinate power to actually benefit the people and not the corporations. That is the answer. And it's like, we have to do that so the communists don't do it. Do you understand? I want minimal government intervention to break up monopolies, stop the excessive greed of private equity, you know, stop these corporations from doing this pseudo legal, because there's no law explicitly against it, then they're allowed to go in and take a prosperous, successful, profitable company, gut it completely, bankrupt it, fire everybody, sell all the stores, pocket the difference, and move on to the next door. We don't need to allow that. And it's not communism to step in and stop that. It's the function of the government. It's stopping oppression and exploitation from a corporate structure by using the governmental structure. We have to do that, or else the communists are going to win. And they're not going to give a damn about the Constitution or capitalism at all. And if anything, you know, they'll make everything worse. And so we'll talk about, we'll get into it more in the next segment. But I really think this goes directly to stuff like the, like we talked about a little bit yesterday, we touched on it, but I'm again going to just kind of try to puzzle this out in real time life because, and I see all these things as like deeply interconnected. That right now there is this sort of disturbing split in society where kids, young people, young adults are having less sex, being less intimate, being less relationships than ever before. You can't have attractive people on billboards or in commercials, but hardcore pornography has no limits. And, you know, they're showing your kid cartoon gay porn in elementary school. It's like, this is the problem. This, again, whether, you know, it's just like everything is uprooted. Everything is unmoored. Everything is chaotic and total nonsense. And I think really at the end of the day, people are just, they just want something. They just want something that says, this is normal. It's normal to want to look at pretty girls. That's actually very normal of you. And it's okay. It's normal for pretty girls to like being looked at. That's also okay. That's normal. That's good. It's good and normal to want to have a family. It's good and normal to want to work and build and create. That's all very normal. It's just that doesn't exist in today's world. In today's world, you have the exploitation of capitalism or the envy and seething madness of the left. All people want is a normal life. People just want to be able to enjoy themselves. And right now, everybody is broke and miserable. And if you actually want to provide a solution to that, you need to look at where we were, where we are now, what's changed in the meantime, and then undo those changes. So we can talk all we want about finances or whatever. We just need to deport 50 million people. If you deport 50 million people, people will be able to buy houses. They won't be living in their cars. They won't be attending DSA meetings and trying to overthrow the government because they're going to have families and other things to concern themselves with. So all of these things, you just got to undo the crap that got us here. You got to deport the immigrants that are driving down wages and driving up house prices. You have to undo the regulations that are keeping small businesses from sprouting up. You have to break up the monopolies, especially in big tech. You have to actually keep up with the financial manipulation. Like I mentioned earlier, you have to actually make laws stopping private equity from doing what is technically not illegal, but obviously hugely damaging to individuals and society as a whole. You have to actually prioritize and concern yourself with the well-being of the American people, and then nobody would have a reason to want to overthrow you. But until you do that, all the talk in the world about communism will do nothing to change the trajectory that we're on.
I'm extremely excited about this. You know, we always have the strongest turmeric at thealexjonesstore.com, and the capsules are 95% curcuminoid. That is the strongest in the market. So the very same great manufacturer that made this made it as a liquid tincture, the strongest on the market, and even better than powder because there's even better absorption. Ultimate turmeric, and it's got a bunch of other amazing ingredients that are known to supercharge turmeric. I know so many people that Advil doesn't work when they have a sprained ankle or arthritis, but when they take our brand of turmeric, they go, this is works better than Advil. And you know, including family I've had that's like, well, this pill's not as big as my other turmeric. My other turmeric helps, but I got to take a bunch of the pills. I said, just take two of these. And whether it's my dad or my wife or anybody, they're like, wow, this worked better. Why? Because those aren't concentrates. Those are raw turmeric. This raw turmeric's 4 to 5% curcuminoid. 95. Okay? So we're very excited about this tincture. Just a half dropper a day. So good for your whole body. 95% curcuminoids. The liquid is better absorption. And this is 60 servings per bottle, so 2-month supply. And right now, if you're a subscriber, you just sign up to lock in at 50%, canceling time for free. You lock in at 50% off. It's 25% off for everybody if you just buy it straight off at thealexjonesstore.com. the new Ultimate Liquid Turmeric Tincture, and it's got a bunch of other really cool stuff in it as well, not just concentrated turmeric root, curcumin lunga, the strongest part, but ginger root concentrated, zingbeer officinal is the, I guess, the Latin for it, and pepperdine concentrated black pepper extract. All of it synergistically works together. 250 milligrams and just a half dropper of the turmeric concentrate, 12 milligrams of the concentrated ginger, and 100 of the pepperdine black pepper extract. Very strong, amazing product. The newest product at thealexjonesstore.com. Liquid tincture, superior absorption. Pepperdine inclusion is the difference maker. Turmeric without pepperdine is largely wasted. Most budget companies do that. Natural enzymes and things in the concentrated pepper get into the cells quicker. Triple ingredient synergy, turmeric, ginger, concentrated black pepper, 60 servings, vegan friendly, GMO free, gluten free, free of major allergies, natural flavors only, no additives or synthetic flavorings, and it funds this operation. And anybody getting the products, the other great supplements at thealexjonesstore.com, the t-shirts, the collectible coins that are about to sell out, the amazing shower filters that are the highest rated, taking out the most toxins of any brand at an incredibly low price, should be a VIP. Every month in your profile, it charges you $30. You can cancel anytime for free. You instantly, when you're charged, get $40 in your profile to spend. Special deals, special offers, and sales on top of all the other sales. Everyone should be a VIP. And if you're worried about some products that sell out from time to time, just become a subscriber and lock in 50% off on all future orders of that product as long as you stay subscribed. Cancel anytime. So become a VIP, become a subscriber, and lock it in with no commitment from you, but it's locked in for you if you choose to keep it locked in at thealexjonesstore.com. New Liquid Ultimate Turmeric, the strongest on the market. So good for your whole body and inflammation. Get yours now at thealexjonesstore.com.
Real time, uncensored, unstoppable. AlexJonesLive.com. Take a stand. Share the link.
Do you want to fight? You better believe you got one!
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
All right, welcome back, folks. You know, just to finish off sort of what we're talking about here with the leftist attempt to take over the United States, let's go to clip 37 here. This is Steve Bannon reflecting what, again, I would think would be obvious to every Republican, but they seem incapable of recognizing the real threat to our nation, our life, our well-being. They think it's in Iran. It ain't. It's right here. Let's watch Steve Bannon. 37.
Did you vote to spend trillions every year in defense? Defending us against what? When we don't have control of the cities of the United States. The enemy is inside the gate. And the enemy's in City Hall in Manhattan, in City Hall in Los Angeles, and Chicago, and Minneapolis, and the governors of these states. And guess what? The enemy is inside the gate in the imperial capital. From the intelligence agency, now we know, all the way to the White House staff.
The enemy is in the gate. What are we spending trillions of dollars on overseas when we don't even have control of our country domestically? Now, Donald Trump is supposed to be giving a big speech tonight. It should begin around 8 p.m. Central Time. We're actually going to be hosting that and commenting on it. Alex Jones will be live starting at 7:30 p.m. Central tonight, July 16th, for the live coverage of Trump's election integrity speech. I'm going to clip two here. This is Caroline Leavitt previewing what he may be talking about later today.
140 days now. If what he says is tonight is backed up by evidence, why hasn't anyone been charged?
He hasn't revealed it yet. He hasn't declassified the documents yet, and you will see what he says tonight, and then we'll move forward appropriately from there.
Tonight from the Justice Department?
I don't speak on behalf of the Justice Department, Caitlin. You know that. Rachel,
please. Will there be charges?
You'll have to ask the Justice Department. I don't charge people. I just speak on behalf of the president. Rachel.
All right, so apparently we'll be talking about election integrity. This probably has to do, at least in part, with the hundreds of FBI agents that recently just went down to collect evidence in Fulton County, Georgia, where we know some of the most egregious and obvious fraud was carried out, far from the only place. But again, I would say, I would reflect and, you know, echo what Thomas Massey says about this, which is it really about rigging the vote? You got to actually deliver for your people, or else elections don't matter, no matter how fair they are. Let's go to clip 41 here. This is Thomas Massey on MS Now talking about the threat of fraudulent elections. Let's watch.
The president's going to be making a speech to the nation tonight in which he's going to outline alleged fraud in the 2020 election. We had Jay Clayton, who wants to be the new DNI, up in the Senate yesterday, incapable of saying that Joe Biden won the election in 2020. Has the president just convinced himself that he won the election, even though he knows that he didn't? There's no evidence there. And why does he keep going back to this?
You know, we're pushing the SAVE Act, Republicans are, which would require ID to vote and to be an American citizen. And I support that. But I don't think the problem, you know, is that our elections aren't secure, because we control the House, we control the Senate, we control the White House, and in some degree, we control the Supreme Court. So I asked my Republican colleagues, why are you complaining about election fraud? We won all the damn elections. The fraud that's going on is we're not holding ourselves to the promises that we made of fiscal responsibility, putting America first, making America healthy. The problem is we're wasting the opportunity that we were given in these elections, that we won all of them.
Yep. Very, very well said. Thomas Massey says, I appeared on Morning Joe alongside Representative Ro Khanna this morning to discuss current news and our legislation, the Epstein Transparency Act 2. Epstein survivors still waiting for justice. Our bill allows state AGs to do the job the federal DOJ refuses to do. So that's an interesting strategy as well. He's sort of trying to put Todd Blanch in a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. But look, obviously voter fraud is very real and a major concern. And while the Republicans have not done nearly enough with the mandate that we gave them, one of the main things they should be doing and should have done, you know, a year ago was pass the SAVE Act or do something to undo the fraudulent changes to the election system that the Democrats used to cheat. And of course, the evidence, once again, is absolutely overwhelming. It just never got reported on, so they're able to lie about it. So we will be covering Trump's speech. Again, the speech is supposed to start at 8 p.m. Central. Alex Jones will be live 7:30 Central. You can find that stream everywhere you find the Alex Jones Network live streams, such as rumble.com/TheAlexJonesShowLive, alexjoneslive.com/show, and at Real Alex Jones, as well as at AJN Live, streaming on all of those platforms starting tonight at 7:30 Central. It'll be a barn burner, folks, and I hope you're there to see it. Okay, so everybody saw, I'm sure, at this point. Oh, ABC NBC will not air Trump's election security speech on broadcast networks. Okay. I wonder what they'll air instead. That's sort of a, we'll get into that in just a second, but they must hate money. They must hate money because everybody's going to be watching that speech. Why would you not want to air it? Because they're not capitalists. Because they're using their positions to gain ideological benefits, not actually make money. Anyway, we'll get back into that because that's another aspect to all of this that's worth considering. And again, I see all of this like part and part. It's all sort of the same thing happening, which is the feedback loop, the scam, I guess you could call it. I mean, whatever you want to say, but the feedback loop of destroying our way of life, destroying the quality of life, destroying our economic system, and then providing the only available answer being communism, being globalism, being a takeover. It's just that over and over. And like you have this post from earlier today, VW in Germany is cutting 100,000 jobs and closing four plants. This is estimated to lead to another 300,000 job losses at suppliers combined. That results in 886,000 job losses in Germany, when including the 486,000 job losses from the last round. At Naked Hedgie, Alex Craner says, "These are war preparations. Prosperous people with good career prospects aren't keen on dying in trenches. First, you have to immiserate them, create very high youth unemployment. You steal their future, then tell them who's to blame." And I can't help but agree. I can't help but seeing all of this as part and parcel of the same general movement across Europe and the West. Collapsing the industry, collapsing the energy production, collapsing the opportunities for young people, forcing them on government dependency, hopefully for life, replacing them with foreigners who you can pay pennies on the dollar, just hollowing out the middle class and making, you know, the economic future uncertain. So war seems ever more like a solution. So everything's collapsed, like everything is being driven in this direction. None of this is natural. It's all fabricated and manipulated, I believe, to bring about this exact result. Like I said, you can't have a drive for communism if capitalism is working correctly. You have to break that first. And the people breaking it are the ones running it and exploiting it. But again, let's get down to brass tacks, like Stephen Miller was talking about. Leftism, whatever you want to call this impulse, this motivation that's driving people on the left to, you know, want to burn everything down, it is driven from desperation. It's driven from the fact that we have been totally dislocated as human beings from anything that we recognize for all of human history. We are not supposed to live like this. That's the problem at the end of the day. We're not supposed to be isolated. We're not supposed to be communicating electronically. We're not supposed to be doing any of this. So how do we get back? Or how do we, I don't know, manipulate our current situation so that it actually makes some sort of sense and actually benefits the people living in it? But again, hopefully you can see the through line here of the seething jealousy, the hatred of things that are beautiful and good and successful and wanting to tear it all down. When you have things like this, new broadcasting guidelines for women's athletics have been released to crack down on camera angles and slow motion replays that quote unquote sexualize athletes. This guideline highlights shots broadcasters are urged to avoid. And actually, guys, if the crew can find a video from yesterday, I don't even think I can say the name of the video. He schools this stupid woman. There's a video from yesterday about schooling a stupid woman. And I want to play that because that explains what's actually behind the uniforms that women wear at the Olympics. But I've got a couple, you know, responses to this that I think are accurate. There's a reason why they do this while promoting porn and calling prostitutes content creators, and you're not going to like it. So I don't know what this guy's hinting at, but again, everybody should be able to recognize the sort of absurdity of the left wing, whatever you want to define it as. The cultural arsonist, the dismantling faction rather than the building faction, they love pornography. They love lasciviousness. They love, you know, sexual liberation. But they're highly offended if you look at a woman the wrong way. It's like, what are you talking about? What is this madness? And it's about destroying the beautiful, destroying the good, destroying the productive, right? You can have all the sex you want as long as abortion is available. You can do all the sexually, you know, degenerate things you want as long as you're not building anything or producing anything. Then it's good, I guess. Alexander August had this reading. There's a deep sickness here, which traditional people are blind to. The forces that wage war on eroticism don't register pornography as a threat, but candid photos of beautiful athletes are. Have you ever asked yourself why that is? All right, guys, now you're just showing porn. So we don't need to do that. You can stick to the athletic videos. Thank you. I thought this was sort of the best read of the whole situation. Eve Kinnunen, I don't know how to pronounce that, but she's right here when she says, this is all examples of things men find pleasant, but in a more restrained way than they might find hardcore porn and OnlyFans pleasant. The hijab is a wicked thing. Female beauty is worthy of display in moderation because the beauty of women is very obviously one of the greatest goods God gave the human race. Here too, virtue is the mean. The hijab and the harlot are the same error in different directions. And this in response to Brigadier Ketchup on X saying, things that libs are threatened by: hot female athletes, hot girls in movies, F1 grid girls, hot flight attendants, etc. Things libs are not threatened by: hardcore pornography, OnlyFans, etc. I don't have a, you know, perfectly clear-cut answer to this. But it seems to me that just recognizing this dichotomy is enough to sort of understand the unspoken underlying sentiment here. As long as it's degrading and disgusting, it's good. As long as it's a fat, adult, hairy man with a beard and a dress waving his junk in front of kids, that's beautiful and wonderful and love is love. But if it is a heterosexual white couple with five babies, that is disgusting. You're destroying the earth. It really gives me Nazi vibes, right? So, like, this is the real dichotomy. Whatever this is, whatever this thing that I lack the vocabulary to explain, this is what the actual dichotomy is. And every human being can choose one side or the other. You can choose the degenerate, the disgusting, the exploitative, or the beautiful, the orderly, the well-designed. The same people, in fact, I think I have that tweet coming up here. But again, like that, you know, it's just like such a good point. Like, what does explain this? Why are they threatened by F1 grid girls or hot girls in movies or on posters or in advertisements, but but dudes dressing up like chicks and stripping on a stripper pole in front of 3-year-olds is seen as the most beautiful, moral, innocent thing in the world? I don't know. I couldn't tell you what's going on in their minds. All I can say is that it's wrong and evil and bad and that we want nothing to do with it. But this from David Santa Carla at the Only DSC in response to the new crackdowns about not looking at, you know, girls at certain angles, says the people who made these rules are the same one who watched billions of children to watch this. And it's that creepy transgender parody of The Last Supper from the Olympics. And the thing that makes this most, like, so baffling is that it's everything they believe. That everything they believe has this inversion of reality to it, right? They don't want sexy athletes running around, but they do want hardcore pornography in your elementary school. Like, that's one of these things. But it goes absolutely everywhere. They're hyper aware, hyper terrified and paranoid about the specter of, you know, white patriarchy while singing the praises of and celebrating the most brutal, patriarchal, misogynist, you know, Islamic sex that keep women as slaves. It's like, why is it? Why is it everything they believe is like this? And the answer is because they don't have principles. They don't have morals. They don't actually believe anything. Their entire philosophy is just one of destruction. It's just one of dismantling. When they say that, like, there are builders and there are destroyers, that's real at, like, a metaphysical level. Like, in their cells, they just feel an instinct, like a beaver building a dam. They must destroy. So, like, when you actually, if you actually had principles, if anybody actually had principles, everything would be a hell of a lot easier, right? Everything is like this. If they had principles, the left would be on our side when it came to Somalian welfare fraud, right? What is the left-wing excuse for wanting the welfare system to be exploited by billions of dollars? It doesn't make any sense. If they actually had principles, the principle might be something like American welfare should help American people get back on their feet, and that it's right for a government to provide subsistence living for its people at the very latest, like at the very least. That might be the principle. And then when there is a threat to that, they would be against the threat. Hey, I want the welfare to system to be successful and robust safety net for the American people. Okay, well, it's being exploited by billions of dollars by foreigners. It's like anybody who actually believed in the welfare system would be like, well, that's horrible. We have to stop that so this welfare system can operate successfully. I believe in the welfare system, so we have to protect it from exploitation by people that don't deserve it. Why don't they believe that? Why don't they care? It doesn't make any sense. Everybody who cared so greatly, was so fearful of COVID, was willing to, you know, no longer talk to your family over wearing masks, but you don't care that it was man-made and was released possibly on purpose, but possibly as a result of an accidental leak from a lab. You were the ones that were scared of it. You were the ones that were telling everybody that COVID was going to kill everyone and we had to take it super seriously. Why don't you care that it was created in a lab? Why is absolutely every position like this? You hate patriarchy. We live in a rape culture, but also we're importing Muslims by the millions, and you're in favor of that. Make it make sense. Make any of this make any sense at all. Why is it literally everything with them? Here's another great example of just the type of people we're dealing with. So this woman named Beth Bourdon posted a GIF of this ice skater celebrating her win. And she says, I just got a life verdict on a death penalty case. So this woman, lawyer, has a client. And I heard some differing reports on what he was accused of. I believe the actual case was that he broke into a woman's house, raped, possibly murdered a like 93-year-old woman. Okay? And this lawyer is ecstatic at the fact that he will not be given the death penalty. Apparently she has a deep conviction about the death penalty. What a horrible thing to put somebody to death. We as a progressive society should never do such a thing. Meanwhile, the moment Lindsey Graham killed, she posts another image with balloons and fireworks saying, diva down, diva down. So as old Phil Rando puts it, she celebrates the death of a Republican senator, celebrates preventing the death of a rapist and a murderer. What common ground am I supposed to seek out with these people? The question is, what ground are they even standing on? Where is she coming from? What is her morality? If you rape and murder a 93-year-old woman in her own home, you don't deserve death. If you're a Republican senator, you do deserve death. That's their moral understanding of the world. Why is it like this? Why are they like this? What is wrong with them? You know, it would actually be easier to contend with a worldview that was at all consistent. But if they were consistent, they would just be nihilist. They'd be happy Lindsey Graham died. They'd be happy the criminal died. They would just be happy everybody's dying all the time. Like, they can't be consistent. Or they'd have to actually live up to their claimed morality and actually be sad if somebody like Charlie Kirk or Lindsey Graham dies. How often they express, you know, well, we gotta get rid of all guns to save one single life or whatever, you know, excuse they say. It's always predicated on, but we just have to save people. And then it's like, well, a father of two, an innocent man who never hurt anybody, was just viciously murdered on live TV. And they're like, good. He deserved it. So like, I think, you know, the point here is that, like, we have to literally picture these people like orcs or goblins or monsters of some sort. They aren't human beings to any reasonable degree. You do not have anything in common with a person like this. I don't understand how anybody does. You celebrate the life of a rapist and murderer and cheer for the death of a congressman. I didn't like Lindsey Graham. I said, I don't celebrate death, but I do feel a massive sense of relief in his passing. But this is disgusting. Like, once you understand that these people are to be treated like insects, like goblins, like orcs who believe nothing, understand nothing, are driven by just a seething hatred of all things good and beautiful, and that are completely and utterly and obnoxiously inconsistent with their every belief, we have to ignore them. We have to oppress them. We have to stop them from having any power in our country. We have to just do what is right and let them cry about it and just move forward. That's the whole point here. These people are insane, and we're only hindered by even trying to figure out what's going on in their brains. We have to just drive ahead.
America is now 250 years old. July 4th isn't about delicious cheeseburgers and fireworks, though I love them so much. It's about, what does America stand for? The globalists cannot have our country survive. They want transhumanism. They want the Great Reset. They want the New World Order. That's why they demonize America. That's why they pay the NBA and the NFL to take a knee during the anthem and push all this communist Chinese garbage. Because what America stands for is antithetical to what they're doing. So, when you go to thealexshowshore.com, we have a whole summer line that just rolled out. We'll show you some of these designs. And most of them, I came up with the concepts. I'm pretty proud of it. I think this is a badass shirt. It's the Betsy Ross flag. And it says, Rebel Scum Since 1776. And the designs just get better from there. And they fund the Second American Revolution happening right now. Because our Revolutionary War never really ended. We're just one continued arc. The flower of the Renaissance, challenging totalitarians and authoritarian scum. Because in truth, they're the scum, we are the future, and we are winning. You wanted 1980-style wife beaters? We got a whole bunch of them with great slogans like, less 1984, more 1776. Got another great shirt, make Orwell fiction again, and so much more at thealexjonesstore.com. And I got to tell you, this fabric, how light it is, how good it feels. I asked the folks at Bigley, can we have some dress shirts? And I sent them an example. This is even better than the shirt I bought that was similar to it. This is awesome. This shirt is so light. It's so great in the summer. Get yours now along with dozens of new designs and so much more at thealexjonesstore.com.
Weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Men's volleyball?
Women's volleyball.
Women's pole vaulting. Yeah, why are they always naked?
Do you have anything more than a pea brain behind those empty eyes? You think these women chose these outfits?
Yes, because they did.
beach volleyball uniform guidelines for the Olympic Games. Women's athletes' uniforms, they have an option of a t-shirt and shorts. They have an option of a tank top and shorts. They have an option of a one-piece bikini, and they have an option of long-sleeve shirts with leggings. Same applies for the uniform code of women's gymnastics. Section 2, under subcategory A, she may wear complete leg coverings of the same color as that of the leotard under or on top of the leotard. Same applies for the Olympic female runners, where they have all of these options, and literally every other sport.
So they have no choice. Wow, this was just a really dumb take.
They have the choice, and they choose to be naked because they like the sexual attention. But your feminist brain went to, he must just hate women, that's why he's saying these opinions. Very juvenile and childish of you. That's so tough.
There you go. A brilliant little breakdown as to what's actually behind women wearing the skimpy outfits in the Olympics. You know, I could pontificate endlessly about the dichotomy of good and evil, but let's just watch this instead, shall we? 44.
Americans, I'm back. The Nixon 28 collection is now available, and I must say, it looks tremendous. Go to the AliceJonesStore.com and pick yours up today. You'll be glad you did.
the plane!
Ultimate Power Drink Mix. The fantasy is real, and it's delicious. Visit the alexjonesstore.com today.
All right, welcome back, folks. This is War Room Live, final hour, and I've got so many videos to show you this hour. I'm going to start with clip number 30 here. A lot of really great stuff has been happening on Capitol Hill the last couple of days. This is Kelly Armstrong grilling a judge on the Trump hush money case. And this is actually from a little while ago, but it's worth remembering who we're dealing with here. Again, as we talk about the left, whatever that term is, when you think about their lack of consistency when it comes to their belief, you know, being against rape culture, but in favor of turning the entire country Muslim, like there's a intense amount of inconsistency in their beliefs. But this also extends to the legal world and their unending hypocrisy when it comes to the enforcement of laws or the overreach of the government. They seem very, very concerned about the death of democracy only if it benefits them. Which again, if they were just consistent in their beliefs, we wouldn't even really have an issue. They'd have to choose one side or the other. It's this unmoredness, this arbitrariness with which they believe things that is so unbelievably frustrating. Again, if you care about the rule of law, if you care about the principle of the thing, you should have been against what they did to Donald Trump from the very beginning. People are still pushing the idea that Donald Trump is some sort of horrible criminal because the left wing decided to destroy the concept of law and order because they didn't want to lose another election to him. Let's watch.
Judge Wilson, what's the statute of limitations on a misdemeanor in New York?
1 year.
The business records case is a misdemeanor, correct?
The underlying crime, the falsified business records, yes, that's a misdemeanor charge.
So the only way to get to a felony is by committing in concealment of another crime?
Correct.
And each one of those crimes has specific elements?
That's right.
And you have to prove, in order to get a conviction at trial, you have to prove every element of the crime beyond a reasonable doubt, right? That's just traditionally how this works.
That is the right way to do it.
So in the indictment, did they put the underlying crime?
No, they did not. They only described it as other crimes.
Okay. And in the jury instructions, did they put the specific underlying crime?
No, they... Falsifying business records was described in the jury instructions. There was some brief description of the New York State election law violation, but there was no description given of the choice of three crimes. There was a description given of falsifying business records, which was pretty ironic because it was falsifying business records to falsify business records.
So, and that's also a misdemeanor, right?
That should be, yeah.
So you have 2 + 2 = 6. Like, if you commit 2 misdemeanors, you get to the felony statute of limitations, which they had to get or they could have never brought the case.
That's correct. But there's some more question marks regarding the statute of limitations. It's not cut and dry because the time that Donald Trump spent out of New York could be used to toll the statute of limitations. That was the ruling in the Court of Appeals Harvey Weinstein case. He argued that the time that he spent out of California should not have told it, out of New York, that is, in California, should not have told the time limitations, but the Court of Appeals ruled against them on that issue. So that's, I think, how they get around the statute of limitations problem in this case.
So was the election law case a federal election law or state election law underlying crime?
Seemed like it was charged as both. When we got to the jury instructions, there's a violation of New York election law charged, but then there's one among the three charges underlying is an unspecified violation of federal election law.
And then the third one was tax violation, right?
Also unspecified.
So all three of those underlying crimes have significantly different elements of the crime.
That is correct.
Were any of the elements of those crimes listed?
No, not at all.
So, this is important, and it might not be as robust or anything, but when you defend a client in court, if you don't know what the elements of the crime you're defending, how do you mount a defense?
You can't. That's the very issue of fundamental fairness that I referenced. You, as a defendant, are entitled to know what the charges are against you so that you can defend against those charges. Donald Trump was never made aware of what the extent of the charges were against him until the end of the trial.
And those, and the elements of the crime go in the jury instructions. I mean, traditionally that's how it works. Federal court, state court in North Dakota, state court in Minnesota. I've been in all of these different jurisdictions. You actually get the elements of the underlying crime, correct?
Any time that I instructed a jury, I instructed them what the elements of the crime were.
And instead, in this case, they got a grab bag.
They got a choice of three when it came to the underlying crimes, and we don't even know which ones they chose. So we don't know whether or not they could have been unanimous on those three or not. That's another failing of the jury instruction.
So not only did we have not the elements of the crime, but we had three different crimes with three vastly different elements of the crimes.
All unspecified.
None of them in the indictment. The elements of the crimes weren't in the bill of particulars. Last hearing, I had the bill of particulars waved at me like it was some kind of magic document that flew in here with its own cape.
So the statement of facts only describes a series of allegations, a series of actions that it's believed that Donald Trump took. None of them describe any criminal activity. None of them describe any, they don't describe any elements of any crime.
And that's why you believe, as do I, that when this goes on appeal, there's going to be significant legal issues to argue that the jury never actually got them put in front of them.
I have very little doubt that this matter will be reversed on appeal and based upon these issues.
Because I've actually been pretty, I believe jury trials are still the best way to determine guilt and innocence. I just believe juries are only as good as the information put in front of them. So, and with that, I yield back.
Gentleman yields back. The gentleman.
So as we're watching that, and that was posted by Mila Joy, by the way. Mila Joy posted that. This proves Donald Trump had lawfare used against him. It's so simple, even a Democrat could understand it. I don't know if they would. I've got a new dichotomy to put out for you, a new theory to float for you. I think the actual dichotomy may be along the lines of something like reality versus unreality. I think that actually might be the deciding factor here, because there's a sentiment that you see expressed consistently these days where people, it's almost like people think that they dictate reality. And there's a side that sort of is incapable of actually dealing with reality in any way. Like they're allergic to it. It's like when you put water on a hydrophobic plant, like it doesn't stick. They can't contend with it. They can't even see it. Because that's the reality. The reality is that Donald Trump was targeted in a lawfare campaign by a bunch of scumbags using their power and authority illegally to target him because of his politics. Principally, they should be against everybody, should be against everybody with a foot in reality, should be hugely against what happened to Donald Trump. They can't acknowledge that. It's not that it didn't happen, it's that they can't acknowledge it. And I think this may be it. I'm not sure exactly how to define it, but that's a good example where, like, you can lay out to a leftist point by point the 100 ways that the trials against Donald Trump were fraudulent. And it doesn't matter to them. It's useful to them. So it's fine. You know, it's like They say that Donald Trump is a convicted racist, rapist. They say he's racist too. They say he's a convicted rapist. And the reason they say that is because a judge decided that E. Jean Carroll's defamation case can go forward on the basis of her having been raped. He just declared it. There was no trial. There was no evidence presented. There was no defense, no prosecution. It was just by fiat, the judge declared Donald Trump is a rapist. So now you ask a leftist, they genuinely believe Donald Trump is a racist. Why? Not because reality showed that he was a racist, because some guy said it. He gets to dictate reality, and that becomes reality. Do you know what I mean? Do you understand where I'm coming from? I've got another video that hopefully will highlight this. Clip number 20 here. This is Kissin talking to, I'm blanking on his name right now. I think it's for some reason the name Aleister Crowley is jumping to my mind. It's something similar to that. I'll find his name here in just a second. But Kissin, you know, from his podcast Triggered or whatever it's called, Retriggered. I can never remember. But this clip's good. Let's watch.
We see it in policing. Not only in the way the policing is being practiced, but in the instructions police officers get. They're explicitly told not to treat people equally. Explicitly.
Oh, honestly, this stuff is just, it's demented. It's absolutely demented.
That's the quotes from the police instructions.
It may be, because you found one document where some guy who's writing some guidance for police. The idea.
It's the College of Police
guidance. Okay, wait a minute.
This is how police officers are trained.
Okay. But,
why are you saying okay like I'm saying I'm making something up?
Because I think, you know, I'm not saying you're making
up.
Not as deeply as you.
Well, I think you should.
Well, maybe I should, but I...
Because then you wouldn't dismiss the factual things I'm saying out of hand.
I'm not, let me dismiss it in my own way.
Go ahead.
Right, okay. He's going to hog the microphone again.
I am. This is outrageous to me. You haven't looked into this.
Well, because, no, I'm aware of the issue. And
so why are you dismissing it?
Because I think two things. First of all,
What people mean when they say woke. It's not a catch-all phrase. They mean
tertiary
treatment.
No, they don't. They call you woke if you sort of campaign for gay rights.
Not at all.
Yes, they do.
There's loads of gay people who use this phrase woke.
Okay, they may do.
If you're wondering why the left seems so deluded, it's because they literally do not see the problems in our country. Alistair Campbell, that's the guy's name, here openly admitting he doesn't think two-tier policing is real despite the evidence. Do you understand? It is real. It's not up to him. Like, I don't know. Just the way that was phrased was a little bit off to me. They just are refusing to acknowledge reality. That's all it is. And like that response was so typical of conversations I've tried to have. I mean, I'm like having like flashbacks when I hear that. Where it's just like, well, have you looked into it? Well, no, but, you know, I still don't believe you. It's like, but it's reality. But this is really what's happening. And you can see it yourself if you just look for it. But here's me telling you with the proof, here's what's happening. Here's what reality is. And they just can't see it. They can't contend with it. It's like the quote we had the other day where it was, you know, the vaccine truther stuff. If, you know, you have to understand, yeah, the doctors are in on it. The media's in on it. Yeah, they're all in on it. And that's an overwhelming and, you know, hugely daunting thing to consider. But that's reality. You got to contend with it. But that's it, really. That was a crazy clip. Aleister Campbell just refusing to believe what he's seeing. And you know he's refusing to believe it because he understands how bad it is. Do you know what I mean? Like, two-tier policing, if that's real, it's a big issue. And it means there's a lot of other stuff going on. Like, you don't get to two-tier policing. You don't get to the police official training manual saying to treat black people better than white people. Like, that's a real problem for people who are egalitarian, people who, you know, believe in the liberal system. So they just don't want to think about it. I don't get it. I really don't. Because they do not have that same reticence when it comes to believing lies. Remember I said that earlier this week, that like the left only cares about accusations if they're fake. That like if somebody comes out and is like, hey, you know, this candidate used to make hardcore pornography, they'd be like, well, shut up. That's their right to do that. And what's wrong with you? Why would you want to bring that up all of a sudden? But if you want to accuse Graham Plattner of raping his girlfriend 5 years ago, then they're outraged and they want him kicked out of the race. It's like they only care about things that are fake. They only care about racism when it's white racism against brown people that does not exist in the modern Western world. But they let themselves feel, you know, anger and outrage and fury at the concept because it's not real. The actual racism that's going on, that they should be against if they had any principles, they refuse to even acknowledge it's real. This is really it. And this is why everybody feels insane, because half of our country is literally insane. And that's the only way I can even phrase it. Because, man, I mean, how do you get here? How do you get to a place where half the country is screaming endlessly about white privilege while white people are the only group that's discriminated against explicitly and to an enormous degree? How do you get to a situation where women are the majority college graduates and holders of middle-class jobs, and yet you're still being told endlessly that you need more benefits to women explicitly to help them get ahead? They're more ahead than the boys are. Why is it still going on? I almost like imagining a world where the left is consistent, because, you know, there are examples like yesterday there was a post where there was a show in South Africa, Big Brother, some reality show in South Africa, and all the contestants were white. And it was somebody responding going, well, white people are a huge minority in South Africa, so actually this is the most diverse show of all time. You know, actually only 8% of South Africa is white, so this is the most diverse, quote unquote, the most, you know, focusing on minorities project that South Africa's ever had. Like, how funny would it be if left-wingers were consistent in their support for minorities and they were just as, like, outraged and furious when, like, South Africa had black people star in their movies? How funny would that be? Like, they out of one side of their mouth, they're like, oh, so you're casting this movie with white people? What the hell's wrong with you? And then they go to South Africa and they're like, you're casting this with black people? How dare you? White people are the minority. They deserve representation. How is a little white child supposed to grow up believing in himself when all he sees are black heroes on TV? Doesn't he deserve some representation as well? It would actually be funny. But you understand that, like, that would never happen, right? It's an absurd thing to suggest that leftists actually care about quote unquote minorities. They don't. They never did. They hate white people. But you can just imagine if they were principled and actually believed this stuff, you would have the feminists, the whoever out there, they would all be now clamoring for male representation because men are deliberately discriminated against and excluded from positions of authority in our society. Where's the outrage for it? Even suggesting it, everybody listening to my voice knows how absurd it would be to suggest that far left, you know, minority rights activists would ever advocate for white people, no matter how much of an abused, oppressed minority they are. white people will never have the sympathy of the left, ever. Which tells you what it's really about. And tells you the word, the phrases, the talking points about minority support. It's absurd. The whole thing's absurd. Let's go to clip 17 here. This is Representative Brandon Gill receiving official testimony that white men are heavily discriminated against in college admissions. Let's watch.
Under DEI regimes, what races do colleges and universities typically least prefer in their admissions processes?
White, men, Asians. Men is not a race, obviously. But there actually might be a little bit of reverse discrimination actually going against women now because women so predominate in universities. But yes, whites and Asians primarily.
Why do you think that it's primarily those groups?
Because they're in a war with the reality of these disparities. So if you want to have a quota that comes out perfectly racially balanced at the end, the only way that these universities have been able to achieve that is by discriminating on the basis of race and sex in their admissions.
They're at war with reality. Yep, that's it. And again, I'm getting flashbacks to my debate with Destiny, which wasn't even really a debate. So I was just telling him things. He just was not believing me. And it's like, you don't have a choice to believe this or not, dude. This is just what's happening. Yeah, this is it. And I've got so many examples of this. Like this, for example. Little House on the Prairie showrunner. They're remaking Little House on the Prairie so they can destroy it. Rebecca Sonnenschein on why she rebuilt the Frontier Classic around a new lens. Quote, I think a lot of our pop culture portrays the West as men riding around with guns, solving problems with violence and posturing, but that's just not how it was settled. We are really trying to do a show that does not fall back on tropes of sort of masculinity. Let me read that. Pop culture portrays the West as men riding around with guns and solving problems with violence. Yeah, that's exactly how it happened. Do you understand? Do you get where I'm coming from? The allergy to reality these people have? These are the people that will simultaneously tell you that the people that settled America were genocidal white supremacists, but that they somehow settled the West without violence? The women did it for them? What are you talking about? It's so inconsistent. It's just like endless madness from these people. No, the reality is white dude with guns fought their way to ownership of this country, and that is a good and glorious thing that they achieved. And nobody needs a new Little House on the Prairie. Folks, go back and watch the old house on Little House on the Prairie. It's available online. It's an amazing show, and it absolutely, you know, is better than any show on TV today.
My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts, go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. It's globalist siege. It's globalist economic warfare. It's a globalist blockade, an embargo, sanctions against American populist patriots. For everyone that's been watching and listening to me for years, you've seen the attacks, you've seen the deplatforming, you've seen the court battles, the news articles, the demonization, the bogus default judgments. We even have FBI and CIA operatives on hidden camera talking about how their entire goal was to take me out of the knees by knocking out my ability to accept payments. And that model they used on me, they admit, is for all of you.
Alex Jones.
Yeah, so we were after him.
So with Alex Jones. And the goal with him was what, just to bankrupt him?
Pretty much.
Well, because of First United Payments and your support, they failed. And they failed because I had a processor with a backbone who loves America and believes in the free market. One who stands up for American justice and who didn't back down when they received threatening messages and pressure from other major institutions. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you. Meta, Facebook is watching you. Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Consolidation, vertical integration, that is the goal of the BlackRock globalist system. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. This is the key to their entire panopticonic takeover plan, in their own words. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, was very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system, even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. Visit First United Payments now at FirstUnitedPayments.com. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A. by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. That's 877-899-1313. The tyrants are counting on us not to innovate. They're counting on us not to migrate to institutions and organizations that are pro-human just like us. This isn't some new company. I've been using them for almost a decade. They're already taking care of most of the patriots. Whether you're a florist, have a gas station, or you're a farmer, or you've got a little five and dime shop or a factory, whatever it is, online merchants, this is the place for you. These guys are patriots and they're in our corner. They're Americans just like us and they hate the New World Order with a passion. They believe in the free market and they understand this is 1776 2.0. 90% of it is information warfare and financial. And this is just as important as the right to self-defense and guns. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Thank you so much. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Remember, folks, tonight at 7:30, Alex Jones will be live covering the big primetime speech by President Donald Trump, reportedly about voter fraud. Sorry, what was I talking about? Look, folks, we celebrate life. We celebrate beauty. We love humanity. And, this really is moderation is the virtue. It always is. And we're constantly being forced into these dichotomies. We are the third way. We represent that third way. Somewhere in the middle between put your women in hijabs and every college girl with an OnlyFans. Somewhere in the comfortable middle is Americana. Is getting milkshakes with your sweetheart ahead of the sock hop. It's moral and good and beautiful and lovely and fun. But for some reason, we can never maintain that. We are always, forever, being pulled in one direction or another. Maybe this would be a good time to go to clip 22. We don't even need to, though, but it's the same with everything. Clip 22, I guess we can go ahead and play. Let's go ahead and play clip 22 because this is what we reject here in America. This is what we should have nothing to do with. This is the reason we should have nothing to do with it. Here's a conversation between an Israeli and a Muslim. Let's watch.
Me, Hamas.
What do you think?
I love you, Hamas.
What do you think about the Jewish people?
Hamas killed the baby, Israel.
What do you think
no
about
problem.
That?
No problem.
You support the killing of babies?
Me kill baby Israeli.
You support that? You support the killing of Israelis, of babies?
Baby, mama, eke.
Ah,
me, Sikim, baby, mama.
That's what you want to do?
Number one, kill mama, baby, but then mama. Ooh, but then.
And then people ask, Chris, Hamas supporters, see, want to kill Israeli babies, Israeli women.
Yes, Hamas.
You see it yourself.
Number one,
you see it yourself. Muslim people praise killing of Jewish people, of Israelis, of women and kids in particular.
Yes.
What do you say about that? He has no remorse.
Yes, live TikTok.
No.
Baby Israel. Yes.
No shame whatsoever.
Yes.
I thought Islam was the religion of peace.
No.
No? I understand now. I see it now. You just exposed yourself. Truth is finally coming out. Islam ain't no religion of no peace or nothing.
Yeah, you're both just awful. No, you're both awful. I mean, I could show you 100 videos in exactly the same direction, right? Exactly the same, but inverted direction. I could show you video after video of Jewish people saying exactly the same thing about the Muslim people. And it's like, do we have to choose between these? So the Israelis think every Palestinian should be murdered. And the reaction from the Palestinians is just like, oh my gosh, these people are so evil. And it's like, well, what do you think about the Israelis? Oh, we should kill their children. And it's like, and then the Israelis are the ones going, oh, do you see how bad these people are? It's just like, no, you're both awful. You're both awful. The correct answer is the middle ground, which is let's not kill any babies. Nobody's babies need to be killed. It's not helping anybody, okay? You're the bad guy as soon as you do that. So you're both the bad guys because you both do that on an endless basis. You suck. We are the adults in the room. We are the Christians. We are the moderates in all of this. We, America, should step in, should put a stop to both of you since we're stronger than both of you. But this is the problem. This is it's emblematic or representative of everything else that we deal with. Is this really the choice we're being forced to make? You got to be with the Jewish child killers or the Muslim child killers. Make your pick. No. How about no? You have to be a free market, small government capitalist or a full-on, full-blown card-carrying communist. How about no? How about there's a middle ground? In all of this, you have to be wearing a hijab or you have to be doing OnlyFans. How about the middle ground? How about we stop being forced into this false dichotomy, all of these false dichotomies over and over again? And again, there's this real sickness and madness going on when in the same society you have new women's athletic guideline crackdown on sexualizing camera angles, while at the same time, 3/4 of kids aged 12 to 13 have viewed hardcore pornography, usually on a regular basis. You know what I mean? Like, do you understand that it's not like we're too lascivious or we're too controlling? It's like, no, we're too much of both. Somehow we are too much of both. Somehow we live in the most sexualized society that's ever existed. And yet young people are having less sex than they've ever had before. Like, this is bad. This is wrong. We used to have a society that was prim and proper and reasonable and respectable, but the kids got up to some, no good on Friday nights. They got to go out and have some innocent fun and, sow their wild oats and everything was fine. Now it's like OnlyFans or incels. It's like, this is so wrong. This is so messed up. And in a way, I think part of what has degraded all of this is the idea that it's somehow dishonest to, like, be shamed about some of this. Like, I'm trying to figure out how to say this. But there's this idea that if you try to model and try to express higher values, that you're a liar if you don't live up to those values, or, you know, things like sex before marriage. Does everybody wait to have sex until they're married? Obviously not. But when you raise your kids, you encourage them and tell them and implore them that it's the right thing to do to wait till marriage. Bad people look at that and go, you're a hypocrite. You should just admit that sex is fun and good and tell kids that it's wonderful. It's like, no. It's a good thing, actually, to be a little bit hypocritical about these things. I believe that. I think it's good to say, here's the moral that we uphold, and it's okay if we fall short of that sometimes. That's all right. What we don't do is throw the moral out just because you fall short of it sometimes. And that's what the reaction of the left often is like, well, you know, you look at porn sometimes, so I guess it should be absolutely everywhere with no restrictions. Like, no. You're supposed to be shamed about some of this stuff. It's supposed to be done in secret. It's okay if it happens, but it's supposed to be secret, and you're supposed to keep it hidden, and you're supposed to, you know, not admit it. That doesn't make you a bad person. But people have been tricked into thinking it makes them a bad person. Do you understand? Does that make sense? Because again, you extremism on any level is just not good. And you know, you look at a place like Utah, which is majority Mormon, and the Mormons, as far as I know, have some of the strictest, you know, societal codes when it comes to premarital sex or, you know, pornography or anything like that. And yet, Utah is like the number one state. You know, they'll show pictures, you know, maps of the United States, and then in each state is like the number one word searched on pornography sites, and it's like Utah has more gay porn consumption than any other state. And I think that's what happens typically. Like when you try to ruthlessly suppress all expression of human emotion, it starts expressing itself in unhealthy ways. You need to understand and give license to some expression of, you know, youthful hormonal, excitement, because you can't suppress that completely. If you try to, things get weird. Why are Catholic priests, why do they have a much higher percentage of gays and pedophiles in Catholic priesthood? Probably because they don't let their priests get married. That's not natural. That's not normal. You're not supposed to suppress the human sexual instinct like that. If you're called to it, if you're the type of person who can make that type of commitment, then okay, you can be a bishop, but to expect every single low-level priest to be celibate, you're asking for those natural impulses to be expressed in unnatural ways. It's a very, I don't know, I feel like we have to explain, this is like a very American idea of moderation, which really is what liberty is all about, right? The whole idea is, well, again, take the example of, you know, teenagers fooling around, right? Like that's not about, you want your kids to get some life experience in high school. You want them to have relationships. You want them to have breakups, and it's sad, sucks, but you know, you got to go through it. You got to learn some lessons. This is a part of being a human being. This is a part of growing up. These things are all good. If you have a teenage kid and you try to stop them from ever interacting with the opposite sex, like they're going to go crazy. Like it's not going to go well. It's not going to turn out well. At the same time, you don't tell your teenage kid like, yeah, it doesn't matter. Just go out and do whatever you want and, you know, just seek physical pleasure wherever you can find it. Ignore the consequences. Like you never tell them that either. You tell them the right thing to do, and then, you know, you leave it up to them whether they want to follow that or not. You give them liberty. You give them liberty, and if they make the wrong choice, it's not going to go well. But you don't force it on them one way or the other. This is all part and parcel with the same underlying foundational mindset of, like, being an American. We don't want the government to have to control every aspect of our life. We need a little bit of freedom to be human beings. at the same time, you let that go too far and look at the situation we're in now. Everything's messed up. Everything's screwy because people decided that, you know, having morals and, you know, ideals that you live up to makes you a hypocrite if you don't live up to them. Doesn't make you a hypocrite. But stuff like this. Gen Z's search for fulfillment, less sex and more porn, and a deep desire for friendship. Contrary to the over-sexualized depiction of teenagers in shows like Euphoria and Riverdale, Generation Z, born between 97 and 2012, is tired of seeing sex on screen. According to Teens and Screens 2023, a recent report from UCLA, nearly half of Gen Z respondents say that showing sex is not necessary to the plot of a movie or TV show. Many of them also believed romance is overused in media. Why do these, what do these young people want to see on screen instead? Friendship. And, you know, this might be one of the most telling things because, you know, there's a great passage from C.S. Lewis about friendship and about sort of the sickness in people who feel the need to inject sexualization into every friendship. And it's a common thing you see with Lord of the Rings, how Lord of the Rings is a story of community and partnership and friendship, like real friendship, you know, real dedication on a purely, you know, platonic level. And yet, you know, you have gay people being like, oh, this would have been so much better if Sam and Frodo were sticking each other's butts. That's what really is the highest expression of togetherness. Yeah. It's all love or sex these days. Friendship is almost as quaint and outdated a notion as chastity. Soon friends will be like the elves and the pixies, fabulous mythical creatures from a distant past. Well, that's a pretty good quote. It's not the one I was thinking of. But yeah, that's a great one. I mean, there's no shortage of great C.S. Lewis quotes. But there you go. Oh, now Lord of the Rings is a great film. You know, that's what it was missing. And this goes down to like, I don't know. It's just a weird, perverted, demented kind of way to view the world. Because again, in reality, everybody should recognize that the closest relationships that we as human beings experience are like by definition totally asexual. Everybody knows this. The people you're closest to are your siblings and your parents and your family, right? I mean, typically, that's who you're going to have the closest relationships with. Do you think it'd be closer if sex was involved? Obviously not. So, you know, what is this mindset that seems to simultaneously put this incredible value on sex as if it's the thing that defines intimacy alone, like you can't be intimate without it, and yet is like terrified of sex and is driving it out of everywhere. It's just a sickness. It's a sick dichotomy. The data is especially interesting in light of another social trend. The number of teenagers having sex has gone down in recent years, whereas the majority of teens in the 90s had lost their virginity by the time they graduated high school. That is not the case today. Fewer than 40% of today's high schoolers have ever had sex. Does that mean Gen Z is charting a different course than previous generations and seeking authentic friendships rather than sexual relationships during their youth? No. No. I don't think I need to tell you. Actually, I think the amount of friends you have is probably very positively correlated to the amount of sex you have, actually. Because what this actually is a reading of the level of personal intimacy between individuals. And that is what's going down. That's what's collapsing. Sex is an expression of that, but it's not the ultimate. But it's letting you know that the amount of human connection that young people are receiving is like cratering and practically non-existent, which is why they're creating AI companions. There's an article about that recently about how believe it's now, it's like more Gen Z have like digital girlfriends or boyfriends than actual boyfriends and girlfriends. Like, do you understand this is a societal sickness that we're suffering through? Now, which is a little weird because I'm like a Christian right winger. I think there's too much lasciviousness, but this is kind of the weird balancing act that we try to, that we have to try to carry out now. Like, I'm a libertarian. I don't want the government involved in my life. I actually don't want it any bigger than it is. However, I recognize that it's needed to do certain things to get us back on track. I don't think that we should be raising kids to want to be having sex as young as possible. Like, it's not a healthy impulse. However, I want our kids growing up feeling close to one another, having friends, having fun, making mistakes, not being terrified to go outside or scared to drive a car like so many kids these days are. This is unhealthy. This is bad. So, like, we've got to find some sort of middle ground here, because in a weird way, the left are the puritanical ones now, but they only like human expression of sexuality when it's in its most degraded and unproductive forms. Before discussing the issues that Gen Z faces on this front, it's important to underscore the myriad benefits of teenagers being largely abstinent. Having sex at a young age can cause negative effects on mental health, especially for girls. Studies show casual sex can worsen self-esteem, increase rates of suicidal ideation, and create physical and mood-related problems which ripple into adulthood. The population that experiences the most dramatic difficulties from sex are girls under the age of 16. This group faces increased rates of depression or anxiety after they become sexually active, which makes sense given the hormonal differences in the way that men and women react to sex. Women experience intense emotional bonding after sexual experiences, which means they later break up with their partners or are ignored by him at school the next day. As in the case with teens, they often feel emotionally vulnerable and anxious. Adult women experience these effects too, but for the teenage brain that's still developing, the effects are more profound. So again, I agree with that. From a physical and mental health standpoint, it is advantageous for young people to wait to have sex. And I agree with that. However, it's not a good thing that teenagers these days are having less sex. And again, there's just something very bizarre about the fact that kids in the 1950s were having more sex than kids these days. Something very wrong about that. Something very wrong about a time period when, like, all the kids would gather together to find the old, you know, soggy page of Playboy they found in the woods, try to see some skin. Meanwhile, they're having more sex than the kids now that are accessing hardcore pornography for hours every day. So everything has gone horribly wrong, I think, is the final point I'm making here. Everything has gone horribly wrong, and it's because we're being run by people who are emotionally and spiritually allergic to reality and contending with reality and actually noticing the effects of the policies that they pursue and then changing the policies in accordance to the effects that they have. That just can't happen for some reason. But I got some more videos to show you here before we close out. Let's go to clip 25 here, because while we haven't covered it as much in the last few days, the battle over the data centers is continuing and indeed increasing. And we cannot forget that while all this other stuff is going on, they are building the digital infrastructure for the global panopticon, along with Flock and other surveillance methods, which, again, you know, again, let me just, on top of everything else, just remember that the Democrats don't want you to provide an ID for voting, but do want you to have a digital ID to drive your car or access the internet. Because once again, I remind you, they have no principles. They have no morals. They aren't human. Let's go to the video.
On average, a single data center uses a half billion gallons of water a day for cooling, according to industry reports. Some of that wastewater could be discharged into Ohio's lakes and streams under a permitting process under review by the Ohio EPA. Environmental groups have concerns about the impact to water quality in rural communities.
It's like a small city, the discharge that will come out of these. And that will, you know, if they don't have a sewage treatment plant, that will go into the streams or the river or another body of water.
Under the Ohio EPA's proposal, data centers that qualify for the water discharge would get a 5-year permit to release water used to cool down tech components.
This is very real. The EPA is proposing those permits to let data centers dump all that water into the lakes and streams. The Ohio EPA proposed a general permit, this one right here, to streamline the approvals for data center discharges of wastewater and stormwater. This covers a couple different kinds of water. It would allow direct discharge into rivers, streams, or Lake Erie under certain conditions. Permits would be for 5 years. So the EPA is reviewing everything. The agency says it's maintaining water quality protections, but it is necessary for economic growth. Data centers bring jobs and tax revenue. So they're willing to let these concerns kind of go off to the side because of the potential jobs and tax revenue, which we know that there's not really that many jobs that come with these things. It's really just a scam. So the concerns being raised are thermal pollution. The hot water can harm aquatic life. Chemicals, there are real chemicals and metals that data center pollution causes. Volume, just the amount of water and discharges, especially during droughts. So the amount of water they're taking out, the amount of water they're pushing back in. Environmental groups like the Great Lakes groups warn of risks to drinking water, recreation, and ecosystems. So there are real risks here, and you are not going to get a lot of return for these risks, but they're going to plow ahead anyway.
Just, you know, another fabricated problem that's solving a non-existent problem, our lack of data. We'll die if we don't have all of these data centers. How will we survive if we aren't providing internet service to literally the entire world? We got some major problems here, folks, and it really is just amazing that InfoWars, Alex Jones, like, we just seem to be the only ones who can actually figure this out. So, you know, I always think back, like, people love putting different labels on us, and people get confused because we're very strongly and outspokenly Christian, while at the same time not portraying ourselves as pastors better than anybody else, which is one of the things I've always, you know, appreciated about Alex Jones. He's like, you know, it's like, I like sexy women and fast cars, but I'm also a good God-fearing man that will, you know, go to my death rather than tell a lie. And it's like, can we not have that? Is that not the middle ground that we should all be striving for? Can we not be human beings and express our humanity while not, you know, giving in to the most destructive tendencies of our race? I think we can do it. I believe in us. Support us at thealexjonesstore.com, and we'll be back tomorrow. We'll see you then, folks.
My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts, go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you. Meta, Facebook is watching you. Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, was very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system, even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A. by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Online merchants, this is the place for you. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.